by the former Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, which will then be concluded with discussion. If that, therefore, is in order, we will take this opportunity to hand over to the executive as led by the minister in their presentation. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, officials of the department, and the CEO of entities present, ladies and gentlemen. Chairperson, we wish to congratulate you for your election as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development. We further extend our congratulations to the members whose political parties have selected them to serve in this committee. I see here also my shadow minister from the DA, as they outlined, Ms. Babamba. On behalf of the ministry, which includes myself and the two deputy ministers, as well as the departments and entities, we commit to work with yourselves in this coming term of the sixth administration. After the national and provincial elections, the president announced the new ministry, as well as the merger of certain departments, including our own departments of agriculture, land reform, and rural development. This reorganization of government will require careful management in order to ensure that the merger does not take too long, but will be speeded up in order to respond to the priorities that have been outlined from the State of the Nation Address as well as the Cabinet Lefuta. Chairperson, though this is now a new department, we will ask your indulgence, as you have already indicated in the program, that we present the annual performance plan according to the relevant budget vote. We have come to the end of the 2014-2019 MTSF process, in which yearly departments have presented their plans, targets, together with resources that will support such plan. Today, we therefore present annual performance plans reflecting our successes or challenges in meeting our targets. We have tried to align the annual performance with the new strategic direction as outlined in the SONA and Cabinet Lekhutla outcomes of June 2019. Chairperson, honorable members, in assuming office, we have met the departmental staff and entities to share with them the consequence of the decision on the macro-organization of the state. As we speak, the two departments are working together to align the various functions. We have met the MECs of agriculture in order to lay the basis for the intergovernmental framework, as members will appreciate that agriculture in particular is a concurrent function. We will be meeting soon with organized agriculture as well as agricultural businesses to ensure that we can maximize their experience and collectively partner for the development of the sector. Chairperson, I must state it up front before the different departments and entities present to you some of the legacy issues that we will need to address going forward. Some of these might have been in the public domain and therefore they are known to all of you, and others on the background documents that have been presented to you by the committee researchers as well as the legacy reports of the portfolio committees of the fifth administration. Some of these issues, just to flag them, relate to governance and leadership issues. You will note that both departments have had challenges in managing its human resource capacities as well as negative issues that have arisen on labor relations issues, which have resulted to non-functionality of bargaining chambers in particular. Some of these challenges are seen in long periods of suspension of individuals, some of which have led to litigation. The vacancy rate in both departments is a cause for concern, and as we reorganize the department, we will be able to manage this process, hopefully going forward, by ensuring that we align relevant skills to the required posts. The allegations of corruption, some of which were highlighted in the high-level panel report, which was commissioned by the Speaker's Forum, led by the then Speaker, Honorable Baleka Mbete, has resulted in investigations, some of them by the Public Protector, while some of them by the Special Investigating Unit, through proclamations that were signed before we took office. Some of these processes are ongoing, and we may not be privy to actually share with you the outcomes thereof. The legal matters which have imposed certain obligations to the department, such as the judgment in the Lamusa case, which actually require the department to report to court on progress in the settlement of land claims. The legal matters such as the District 6 as well as Mwelase case, which currently is in the court, are just but an indication of legal challenges that we must attend to. The unintended consequence of the establishment of the Office of the Valuer General and its impact on the pace of resolution of claims as well as land reform program in general. The overlap of functions between the two departments, which will be addressed in the organization of this new department. The management of animal and plant health needs, strengthening in order to ensure food security and food safety, as well as increasing our exports. The financial support for upcoming farmers remain a critical issue, which I know honorable members have also, or rather are aware of, and the ongoing challenges, particularly among the structures of the CPA. Chairperson, I'm only highlighting a few of these matters to the committee to indicate that we are conscious that you expect us to address them going forward. We will request an opportunity, maybe not today as we deal with the APPs, to engage with yourselves further on how we think we're going to navigate on all of these issues going forward. I'll therefore ask, Chairperson, that the first department, as you have outlined, which is the Agriculture Department, does its presentation. I just thought that this helicopter overview is necessary just to appreciate to members that we know that there are issues that we must deal with, but maybe not for today's presentation. Thank you very much, Chair. I will therefore, through your permission, ask DG Mlengana to present the Agricultural Annual Performance Plan. Thank you.
Honorable Minister, as put in the program, I think you are handing over to the DG to talk directly now to the presentation that is before us.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Honourable members, honourable ministers, and colleagues. Honourable Chair, the presentation will cover specifically the quarterly targets, which derive from the annual APPs. I won't dwell much on the annual APPs. I'll be more specific in getting into the target ones. But I would like to just say, Honorable Chair, that the Department of Agriculture is a concurrent function. Most of the implementation is done at local level, if you will, provincial level, which then takes those implementation plans to district level. We also, Honorable Chair, for now, are going to involve fisheries and forestry as part of the APPs for the Department of Agriculture, and before we do the measure, because it was the annual performances that we dealt with before the measure occurred. I will therefore, Honorable Chair, go to slide 6 of the presentation, and I will just mention that slide as a high-level performance year-to-date against targets. But I would like to talk about that slide in detail at the end of the presentation. I would therefore invite honorable members to go to slide number 8. That slide contains the strategic goals and strategic objectives of the department. And therefore, our annual APPs have been informed by these strategic goals and strategic objectives. And in slide 9 to 34, we are just going to alert the committee that we have, in our presentation, we have taken into account the State of the Nation addresses of February 2019, the June State of the Nation address, and we align that with the MTSF, particularly the 7 priorities, and of course, Operation Partisan. That having been said, Chair, is the background. Now I would like to go straight to the targets themselves, which are contained in page or slide 39 to 40, slide 39 to 41. We have got five programs. One of the programs that is critical to our that I'm going to talk to right now is food, is agricultural production, health, and food safety. The performance indicator is the number of animal improvement schemes for prioritized value chain commodities. Annually, we are going to do two of those. It is one is and poultry. We will implement those two. I need to emphasize the fact that we're targeting smallholder farmers and producers, trying to improve the quality of their animal production to ensure food security and economic growth. So in quarter one, we will do the mobilization of farmers and collect data with regard to these two schemes. That takes quite a long period of time to convince the farmers and the relevant stakeholders about the significance of these schemes. And quota two will be the same because of the intensity. At the end, we will then produce the report in quota four, the full report in quota four. Because we are also export-led, we therefore had to ensure that we improve the number of plant schemes that we have in prioritized value chains. In quarter one, we will report on monitoring of seed crops and food schemes, improving the quality of the seeds and crops. The same, quarter two will do the same. And quarter three, we will do the same, collecting this data, and then the final report will come up in quarter four. And because on the biosecurity side, we are going to do a risk surveillance, animal risk surveillance, to understand the type of diseases that are there. And the annual target, we are going to do 292 animal disease risk surveillances, specifically FMD, the foot and mouth disease that we're busy dealing with now. And its revenue for the country cannot be here overemphasized. In quarter two, we will manage the surveillance actions, verify and analyze the data that we have collected, and we'll continue doing that until quarter four when we produce the final report. That will continue, Chair, we continue all the way again to quarter four. Then we look at the export protocols. Once we have improved the quality of our meat production and the quality of our food production, we now have begun to sign export protocols. But those export protocols must of themselves comply to sanitary and phytosanitary requirements. Annually, Honorable Chair, we'll do 27 of those. We've broken them per quarter, and we are going to ensure that we meet them. Veterinary strategy is critical for us, specifically when it comes to how we manage diseases, vaccinations in particular. Therefore, we need to develop a framework, and one of those deals with the brucellosis policy to support our veterinary strategy. We know that brucellosis is a contagious disease, and consequently, it is important that we do have what a policy framework for managing that disease. So we'll do the first draft, has happened already on the first quarter. We also are consulting stakeholders. Then we'll produce the final brucellosis policy in the fourth quarter. Well, Chair, slide 42 just deals with the budget. that will ensure, is a vehicle that will ensure that we achieve the above objectives. I'm going to quote it to go to program 3, which is food security and agrarian reform. It is extremely important for this country, food security. And therefore, this program, we're putting an emphasis, for example, on one critical one of various indicators which are interrelated. One of those is the production of reports on national food and nutrition security. What are the interventions we're bringing on that? And in annual report, we will do 4 reports on soil, 2019-20, we'll have to do 4 reports on national food and nutrition security as an attempt to intervene. And quarter two, that is the medium term, Honorable Chair and members, I did not mention to you that I am not going to deal with the medium term, but it is there in the book, and I assume that you will have read it. What I want to emphasize is to deal with the quotas, because they really talk to what we are going to do when. Therefore, I'm not going to speak about that. I'll just go straight to slide 46. We'll deal with the number of reports on national food and nutrition security. It's an indicator. We have to develop that intervention. And the annual target is 4 reports. In quarter one, we will do the first draft. In quarter two, we analyze that draft. Until quarter four, we produce the final report on national food and nutrition security. And then we do full food and nutrition security baseline assessment. It's very important that we bring in the baseline assessment and conduct it in provinces, with the provinces. It is done annually, but we'll do it annually. In 1920, we'll do the national survey on food, nutrition, and security. And the last quarter will be the production of the final report. And the most important among others is the graduate's place in agriculture and in the sector for capacity development. We'll do a status report only in 1920, and we'll have to compile a report on the status of graduates that we have placed in various places in the agricultural sector. Slide 47 is still about these graduates, but we will do about 1,000 graduates that will be placed in all the provinces. And then we produce a report in quarter four. And the National Policy on Extension and Advisory Services will do a report as we consider that extension services is the face of agriculture to our customers. So it is important that we have got a common understanding of what is expected in implementing the policy. And we will come up at the end of the day with a report on what is it that we need to do to ensure that the National Policy on Extension and Advisory Services is produced. Deploying again of extension support practitioners to community organizations, cannot here be overemphasized that indicator. We will deploy and come up with a report about how many we've deployed in provinces and in districts, yes. This policy on slide 48, the National Policy on Comprehensive Producer Development Support is critical as an intervention, so that we speak the common language as to how we are going to support producers. And I think President has spoken on various occasions on this. We therefore, in quarter one, have hosted a stakeholder consultation workshop, and we are going to produce in quarter three, and that's going to go as that consultation will continue in quarter two, and then we then are going to table this to cabinet after we table it to our ministers, and this August forum we will then table it at cabinet. The related to that is the significance of commercializing agriculture, specifically in coming up with black, commercializing black farmers. And we've put a target of 450. We shall talk more later about it. So we need to come up with a program. Black commercialization program will have to be implemented, and the annual progress report on black commercialization has to be approved at the end of the year. That's the target. We will produce an annual progress report at the end of the year. Throughout quarter one and quarter two and three, we consult and we try to come up with a report that understands specifically the criteria. Who are we going to, who is this farmer? How do we choose this farmer? Where do we want this farmer to perform and all that? Those quarters then will deal with that process. The number of households, I think this is significant. The number of households that we need to support with food, agricultural food production initiatives. We will, in the year 1920, do 80, just above 86,000. We break them the province. I think it is significant that we know what each province is going to do. That's what you get in slide 50. I won't go in detail about the numbers, Chair, unless required to do so. But it is right there. But again, let's go back to the quotas. The number of households to be supported with agricultural food production initiatives, we will do 3,000. Of course, I said annual will do 86, just 86,000, above 86,000. Quarter one will do 3,516, and all the way to 14,483 in quarter four. We are determined, Chair, that these initiatives, we concretize them, and we ensure that they happen at district level. And that's why we have even broken them per province. And I think we are going to take them in consultation with our provincial colleagues. We will take them to district level. The number of hectares that we need to plant for food production for the 1920 financial year, we're going to do just above 109,000, and we break them per quarter, Chair. The number of extension support practitioners that we need to deploy, we are going to deploy 20, Chair, and that can only be captured at the end of the year, which is fourth quarter. Number of smallholder producers that we need to support, 26,200 for 1920, and there the, we've broken them per quarter, Chair, in slide 51. And then that's the budget, Chair, in slide 52, that will carry the execution of those plans. Now we'll go to slide 57. As I mentioned, Chair, that I'm going to talk more about the midterms. In 57, Chair, we talk about the creation of, as an indicator, the creation of an enabling environment for smallholder producers to access market. This has been a critical challenge throughout, where claims have been made. In fact, we do. They are true that our farmers do not have access to markets. We are therefore going to create an enabling environment to ensure that that happens. How do we do this annually? We are going to ensure that an annual report on the implementation of the FA Gap certification program, which is done by our one of our entities, we will have to come up with that certification. And in quarter four, we'll come up with that report. That is specifically for exports. And one of the other certifications there is the global gap. Agro-processing. As an indicator, we are going to come up with a number of agro-processing entrepreneurs that we need to train for processing norms and standards. We will do, in 1920, 60 of those. And here I can just say, as a matter of interest, that the area of agro-processing has greater margins for growth, both in terms of the economy and in terms of food security. We therefore are taking this particular area quite serious as a focus as a department, and also the cooperatives. base the target share, we'll do annually 12, and until each quarter we break that into three. Number of cooperatives, again, that we need to train is 144. We break them per quarter. Agri-BE enforcement guidelines. And this area has been an area that is at the center of transformation. And, Chair, it's one of the MTSF, in fact, it's number one MTSF priority, transformation and economic growth. We are going to ensure that we create stronger guidelines for BEE and ensure that we enforce those. And that is going to take throughout the year, Chair. And we are going to be dealing with stakeholders, talking to them, and making sure that they understand what these guidelines are. We have already produced a draft, and that draft, we are sharing it with these stakeholders. That includes the sector codes. Slide 59. Market opportunity profile research. We need to see what are the opportunities, which markets are we going to serve, what type of products are we going to produce in those markets? We will do that in the rest of the year, and then trade agreement to be implemented. This is very critical, and especially in dealing with our neighbors. The Africa Free Trade Continental Agreement cannot here be overemphasized, and we do know, Chair, the reported chairman from SFSA, that 38% of our exports as export revenue come from the north, come from Africa. We therefore want to ensure that we implement trade agreements and ensure that the commercialized farmers that we have spoken about actually begin to export to South Africa. I think it's important that we emphasize the significance of market opportunities in Africa. We will do, in slide 60, international relations strategies to implement that annual target report on strategic engagement of partners with South, North, and South, and multinational agencies. In quarter one, we'll produce that report, Shane. And we'll continue doing that the rest of the year. We'll continue producing reports and interacting with stakeholders until we have come up with a full report, in other words, a progress report on the strategic engagements with these partners. Slide 61, let me just rush. International relations, annual target, we have got a status report on our compliance to AU, the African Union, and SADC obligations. Very significant. Progress report on compliance to those obligations. We will do it the rest of the four quarters, Chair. And secondly, Chair, I think the facilitation on the implementation of the agreements on the BRICS, we will ensure that we focus on the BRICS countries in our export relationships. And also the compliance on implementing the protocols that relate to our agreements with the BRICS. And slide 62 deals specifically with budget that will carry that. Chair, the next slide deals with forestry and fisheries. Just to show that we have been working on them, that it was slide 67 in particular, with the number of things we have been doing there, the number of hectares planted in temporary unplanted areas, we'll do 945 hectares. That's the target for the 1920, and we have broken that target per quarter until quarter four. The Western Cape has had problems. We are going to recommission the Western Cape State Forest Plantations, and we have put about 9 business models to be developed in trying to recommission the Western Cape State Forest Plantations. Terms of reference in quarter one, on the appointment of the transaction advisor, we need to develop those terms of reference. We appoint the advisor, in quarter one, in quarter two, and that's a process, it's not just appointing. Then we recommission the business model after we've developed it. And then the rest is just the agro process for a strategy. That's very significant. We involve our people there and localize the production of chairs and tables next to where our people are. The project plan has been developed, and we have piloted these in two provinces, and we will continue trying to pilot the project plan until we now know that our agroforestry infrastructure strategy does include the small agro growers, small farmers, so to speak. The rehabilitation of state of forest is significant here against deforestation. The annual performance monitor report on agricultural land that has been rehabilitated, we have to produce that report. And the annual performance monitoring report on the climate change programs that affect, for example, the sustainability of this forest, such as, for example, the wildfires that destroy the Nizhna forest. We are very cognizant in ensuring that we rehabilitate those forests that have been burned or destroyed. Number of hectares of state indigenous forests rehabilitated, we are going to do. We put 300 hectares of state indigenous forest, and we broke that into three quarters, and we start with quarter two, all the way to quarter four, doing 100 in each. Revitalization of irrigation schemes is central in general in agriculture, but more in forestry, we are going to do one irrigation scheme. We are going to rehabilitate one irrigation scheme in 1920. Climate change adaptation mitigation plan for agriculture is significant in the face of huge climatic change conditions. We are going to produce an annual report on the implementation of the strategy. That is only one annual report that we will do for the year. We are continue trying to improve that report because we need to come up with strong, understandable, agreed adaptation and mitigation strategies for climate change. And it is there. Climate Smart Agriculture is one of those. We've come with it, Climate Smart Agriculture. Annual report on the implementation of this Climate Smart, of the framework on climate change agriculture.
2 minutes remaining.
On fisheries, sir, which is the last one, is just 79 to 84. There are a number of things, catalyst projects, small scale agriculture, small scale fisheries. We're going to develop that. We've already come up with the aquaculture bill, development bill. We're going to implement that once approved by Parliament and passed through this House. So that's what I can say about the entire targets as we have for the 1920 and broken down per quarter. If I still have 1 minute, on slide 6, on the targets, so you can read there, honorable members can read there, on what we intended to do in 2018-2019, and the achievements of that year. For example, supporting 300,000 smallholder farmers, and the numbers are there of how much we've achieved. And that has been validated, and it is there. And we'll continue to increase that to ensure that we cover more smallholder farmers. Chair, thank you for giving me the opportunity to present. Of course, it was a rush, but it really does cover what we believe we're going to do. And most of it is really a continuation of what we've been doing, especially support to smallholder producers. Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you, TG. Honorable members, there you have it, the annual performance plan of agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. You may... feel free to pose questions or questions of clarity. We will start with the Honorable Stain and move in that way. So I'll acknowledge members And if you don't have any questions, don't be shy to not speak. Or sometimes not being speaking or being silent is actually golden. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also welcome to the Minister and the Deputy Ministers. We are looking forward to working together with you in this portfolio. Chairperson, I'll try and be short, and thank you for the DG for the presentation. Chair, I'm going to ask three specific questions based on the slides, and it's going to be dealing with specific issues, because I think that's part of the problem that we have been dealing with in agriculture and land reform. It's all good and well. We have lovely ideas, but if you pin it to a specific issue, it becomes problematic. And I'm sorry that I'm going to do this, but I just want to show some kind of point here. We're discussing broad ideas, but when the tar hits the road, there's problems. The first one I'm going to speak about, Chairperson, is on slide 15. 14, where it speaks about, I'm now confused myself, slide 13, implementation of exports protocols by adhering to phytosanitary requirements. Sounds lovely. So I received an email last year, this year again, and it's still not solved from a specific gentleman. They are trying to establish import and exports of semen for cattle to Brazil and Argentina. Now, the letter that I received, and I'm sorry I'm not going to mention the official that I was dealing with, said South Africa received a new proposed veterinary health certificate for the exportation of bovine semen to Argentina dated 26 May 2016. This proposal has been reviewed, 2016. We still haven't dealt with it. It's one issue. I'm just doing this as an example, Chair, that we can't just put, we're looking at, are we doing it? My question is, do we have the required staff and personnel, the administrators, the people sitting there in offices, the warm bodies, to deal with the issues? Because this is what's causing frustration, and we need to solve that. So I see you, and Chair, I'll stop there.
Yes. No, thank you, Honorable Stein. Just to assist also new members, can you locate that within the presentation that has been made so we understand in terms of the annual performance plan where to locate that, because we have to follow up on these issues. So we don't want to speak on general issues that don't assist us, even those new members that are here, into locating the matter as know as to how do we follow through with these issues.
Well, thank you, Chair. So on slide 13, it speaks about agricultural exports and the value market. So the broad thing would say, the first one, implementation of export protocols. So other countries, how do we deal with import of export of agricultural products? So it's all great, but we can't import and export because certain things were not put in place, and it's officials that need to deal with that. And if we can't solve it because the warm bodies are just not there, or there's something else that's policy problems, we need to solve that. So that's the first one. Then I'll just take the second one. I won't take the others. Chairperson, slide 12. It speaks about hectares to be planted and all kinds of things. It can actually go to all other field things that speaks to our small-scale farmers. But there's the third bullet point said blended finance model. I want to find out from the Minister and the Chairperson if that blended finance model has been approved. Is it on or is it not? We received a letter from Land Bank to say that everyone must stop. I want to find out why. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mbabama. I can't see. Okay, Honorable Masipa, no question.
Honorable Chair, thanks for the opportunity. I can't locate the slide, and please excuse me, but I'm just going to make a comment. I'm not going to make a question. I think I support the extension officer's training. And for me, really, is that it has to align with the fourth industrial revolution. And secondly, I think it is very important that it becomes very, very pragmatic, because at the moment the updated knowledge, I think, is lacking with regards to educational outcome. So I think we need to really look at that. And I think what is really also very, very important from where I sit is that banking and finance support is actually key in the agricultural sector. So it is crucial that when we support these farmers, we support them from an understanding of how to really package their request to the banks, and obviously grow that aspect of knowledge. And very important, climate change, I think, is a big challenge in the agricultural sector right now. Thanks.
Honorable Britt.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I picked up something in the budget, and I see it is reflected in the APP, and I would like to speak to that. Specifically, the DG mentioned foot and mouth disease and that we are currently handling that. And I see we have underspent in capital assets, and it is specifically one of our APPs as well to build a fence with regard to that. And I just want to find out where are we in terms of that, in terms of the capital assets that we have underspent on and actually given towards that. How are we planning to actually see that this comes off the ground and that we actually implement this and the building of the fence to ensure that our farming communities and our cattle and so forth are safe? And then just in terms of, if you would allow me, Chairperson, we are speaking of, and the DG mentioned, 450 black farmers we will actually encourage, and the department will assist in commercializing and helping them to commercialize. We got a report yesterday from our researchers that says that we have a target and we don't necessarily perform or reach that target. We continually underperform in terms of assisting small farmers and so forth. How does the department reach that 450, and how are we actually going to achieve that? Because I see quite a number of, also just to get back to the households we are supporting and the smallholder producers, 26,000, 200 in this term, and I'm worried that we will not be able to achieve that. How did we get to the quarters? I think it was quarter three on page 51. We are saying that, we'll support 12,000 in quarter three. How have we actually decided, and how has the department got to that number and in terms of assisting that? And then maybe just a matter of concern, it was raised yesterday in our briefing session as well, that agro-processing is a main focus specifically for the department. And I am from the Free State, and we have a number of agro-processing projects that have not come off the ground, that have not been successful. I specifically think of Gharib Fish Hatchery, which was a national department project, and it's kind of in between, nobody understands, is it provincial, is it national now? And if you look at Frere de Sevel as well, it's become a dairy farm, and the initial intention was the agro-processing as well. So how are we actually going to see that we have these APPs and we have these targets, but we actually achieve them and they don't become big white elephants as Gharib Fish Hatchery and the rest in the Free State? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Masasi, welcome. You'll come back and have a second bite at some point. Honorable Montredi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to everybody. Chair, I've got a few things that I want to put to the department here. One is on the issue of commercializing your 450 black farmers. I think this was addressed by the former President Zuma in his SONA address in 2017. And up until now, I am not sure what is it that the department has done in making sure that that program is implemented. Two, still on the same issue of commercializing of black farmers. I, as a young person, would want to find out from the department in terms of the model that they are going to put in place to as far as identifying those farmers. In the annual report of the department, in fact, of the committee, the five-year plan of the committee, it is reflected in there saying that the intention was to take 50 farmers per province, so that you do with that implementation. I want to raise this as a young person and say there was a program that your department did in Dr. Ruth Mompati in Kagisana Molopo, where a certain old farmer by the name of Mr. Disipi was taken through this program at an age of 74. A 74-year-old wanting to turn a 74-year-old into a commercial farmer. Somebody who 2 years, 3 years passed away. Now all that money, almost about 36 million that was injected into the program, it has to go to the estate so that the children must actually take piece by piece of that money. Now I want to check from your department, what model are you going to put in place? Who are you going to prioritize as you are dealing with this issue? Because if you are going to take this, give to people who retired to go and farm. Because some of these people, they are working, as soon as they are 65 years, they go on retirement. They go and farm. They are tired. You must invest in young farmers who will contribute for about 20, 30 years into agriculture. So I'm more interested, DG, in terms of the model that you're going to use in identifying those. And please, don't create farmers. Farmers are not created. I'm a farmer myself. You don't create farmers. You must tap into farmers that are already there so that you have people with passion so that they are able to actually take this as their daily job. Make sure that when this program unfolds, you must actually consult as widely as possible to other agricultural groups that are there so that you must get the best people so that this program must not fail. Like many other programs of the department with good intentions that failed only because we wanted to create farmers. We get farms for 36 million. We give it to a group of people only because they supported me at one point. The farm is run down completely. And we are speaking about food security, and that on its own is a threat to the food security. That's all the department wants to. So I think I've said a lot around the issue of commercializing of black farmers. The other issue that I want to speak to is on the hectares that you said you want to plant as a department in this financial year. I want to check to say, are you only providing these farmers with seeds only? Because in the main, your department has only given farmer seeds, and we are saying you are planting. How do you plan giving people seeds? Because, not seeds only, give them seeds and fertilizer. But when you look at the enterprise budget, maybe for a particular crop that you are giving them, there's still money that must be spent on soil preparation. You expect the same people to go and use money for soil preparation, their own money. And in your report, you are saying we are planting 19,000 hectares on paper. But I can tell you, most of those seeds, the same farmers, they can't plant them, and they end selling them to those with money to can plant them. Now, if you are saying you are planting 19,000 hectares, let's see the enterprise budget of that crop that you are planting. You are then saying, I'm going to spray, I'm going to put a disc, I'm going to put a plow, I'm going to put a vonertele, I'm going to do all of these things that must be done. And that's not what you're doing. So don't put things and say you're planting 19,000 hectares and you only provide seeds and fertilizer and the rest is for the poor farmer to fund for the whole production. And you are claiming you've planted. You've not planted. Because putting off seeds and application of fertilizer only comes after you have done almost 80% of the work. That is the remaining 20%. So please also take us through, what model are you going to put in place as you deal with the planting of the hectares? I may have not got them correct, but something around 19,000 or so.
Let's deputy the Honorable Montwedi. We are at 10:30 now. We're supposed to start another presentation. Oh. I just want to ensure that
yeah.
we cover other members.
Just give you one last minute. Your program on Agri-BEE vis-a-vis the land bank, on the report of the previous committee, I picked up that that has since been taken to the land bank, and the department is having challenges with the land bank to as far as land bank not knowing if is it accountable to the department in terms of that program or to treasury. Take us through that program also. And lastly, training of cooperatives. Don't train people on safety of using tractors. Tell us what program, what training programs are you taking there? For the past 10 years, we've been fighting about artificial insemination. What programs are you bringing? Bring programs that will assist our people to be in the mainstream production and to be part of the economy. Extension service also, you are just not doing it right. You are not doing it right. But I don't have time. I will be able to, but you are not doing it right. Before it was done right, now it is just something else. Those people are no longer supporting our people. I'm sorry, Chair, it's only that I am a farmer now. Farmer said I must come in.
No, Honorable Stain, you will be very happy to see that the committee of farmers this time around. And we speak with passion. But I just want to concentrate, honorable members, on time so that you have the program next to you. It says at 10:30 to 10:45. It's a presentation. And then we need to ensure that we align ourselves to the issues of time. Now, if we don't do that and we don't adhere to time, we will suffer staying here until 10 in the evening. So let us be mindful of time, Honorable Mutembu. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. I'll not misuse your time. First, my main concern, let me thank the Minister and Deputy Minister and their department officials. My main concern is where, in a number of areas here, one, while we have targets, but at the end, while we have indicators, when we have targets, most of them are reports. This is worrying me. I think I have to get some clarity on this, where it seems the actual target is to produce a report at the end of the year or end of the quarter. I just need a clarity on that one. And on that issue of graduates, also we have a report. What would be the nature of the report on the graduates that has been placed there? It's not clarified. And on the part of extension officers also, there's a number of 20. In that 20, do we think it really covers the Republic of South Africa when we have 20 on these commodities? But it can be explained, because maybe the commodities are that many or few. And in slide 51, there is where you were talking about the increasing of the hectares. I just noticed that in quarter two, there's a great increase of the hectares. I wonder what is the rationale, what is happening in that quarter two, that it increases during that quarter two. And I'm worried in slide 58, where you don't even, there's a gap where you have nothing, not even monitoring, in slide 58, if you know that one. In slide 28, again, there is where you have indicator being a number of schemes, but your target becomes producing a report on Khauna Faso, which is linked to what I've been saying before. In slide 30, we have got that draft bill, which is taking right up to 2022. I wonder if it is not, is it going to be helping anyway? And then the annual report, when they become targets, also is worrying me. But now, also, is that it would be interesting to know that what is it that is going to have been changed from the previous performance to improve now. Maybe that will be linked later to the legacy report, because it will have to tell you, is there anything that will make different in your performance? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chair, no questions. Thank you. We move on. Honorable Maso.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Chairperson, our Minister, our Deputy Minister, members of the House, and all our officials and my colleagues. Good morning. I would like to take this opportunity and welcome the presentation by the Minister. The aerial was very well presented. We appreciate that. But also to make sure that we also welcome the presentation by the DG, which we also appreciate very much. As all of us, we know that presently we don't have enough budget to implement some of the projects, but we are carrying on with some of the jobs that have been there, which we also appreciate that. My few questions will then go to a few slides. The first slide is on Chairperson, will be on slide 13. The implementation of trade agreement, which talks about the explaining that is from page 16 up to page 18. Now, my question will be that as much as we have those agreements, as the portfolio committee, can we be vanished with more information on what we have agreed upon with those people that you have listed in this document, so that one day when I go to Korea, if the minister chooses me to go there, if they ask me a question, I can be able to answer. Isn't it a minister? Yes. Now, Chairperson, I think when they ask me, I must be able to answer. So I'm lobbying. But by understanding, if I'm not being given this information, I won't be able to answer. So if we pass from that one, then I'll go to page... it will be on page 14. You are talking about the development of 189 compulsory community services veterinarians. Pardon me. Now, I just wanted to check as to whether the department has a bursary of some sort to assist some of those that are upcoming, these young ones. You see, we have what they call the fourth revolution of some sort, where we are having more people who are not working, but some of them, they are postgraduate without having certain skills in the agriculture department, of which, if maybe they are given, if we know that there is a bursary, we can blow the whistle and tell them to apply, so that we move away from this issue here, many people who are not working. Chairperson, the last one is on the same page. It's not page 14 because it's, page 14. You are talking about supporting 144 cooperatives with training. Now, the training, I just wanted to understand, the training of cooperatives on what? All right, yes, I understand. But I will suggest that as we train them, let's make sure that they definitely show their HR, that small HR, even if it were for around, the QMS, their policies and procedures need to be in place for them to sustain their businesses. Because if they don't, you see how many cooperatives do we develop in the country? So many of them. But at the end of the day, they just not end up nowhere without going forward, because they do not have followed their policies and procedures. I think few policies need to be developed to assist them to run their projects. But also, let's take into consideration, yesterday in another meeting in another committee, not this committee of agriculture, they were talking about ISO. And the ISO, in terms of bookkeeping modules, it can assist people to understand the time and when and how to do things. In those cooperatives, we are suggesting that they need to be getting someone, one of the sitters, in the country, should assist in terms of implementing the ISO in the cooperative movement. Because without ISO, without this quality management system, the SABS, but I think those things can help the cooperatives to be good in the market area.
Can you
wrap up, please? Thank you. I think everything is fine. The issue of the intergovernmental relations, Chairperson. the department with regard to the issue of intergovernmental relation policies to make sure that the cooperatives, the 30% that we are talking about in the budget, is definitely implemented. So it must be implemented, those policies must be implemented in different departments. What are our collaborators who work together? Thank you.
Honorable Chapa.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department. Chair, the Minister has alluded to the fact that she is taking cognizance of issues that we might have, that at a given time, not dealing with APP, they could be able to address some of our concerns. And we really appreciate that, and we will use that space. Chair, I'm encouraged with the programs that the department has targeted, because it all these programs talks to the mandate of this department. The minister has also indicated that these programs are implemented at provincial level. Now, my comment on this one is only for the department to strengthen its oversight and monitoring so that there is impact on the ground, so that when they produce these reports finally at the end of the year, it should not only be reports, it should be reports that we could say there's impact on the ground, there's really food security, there's growth in the agricultural sector and even in the economy of this country. Chair, I am encouraged also by the fact that I have seen the department has got the draft, as indicated, norms and standards for inclusion of vulnerable groups, which addresses in the main what honorable members are indicating here, especially honorable member Ntwedi, to say what is it that we do in the criteria for inclusion of others and especially your youth, women in particular also. So we will be watching the department and making sure that the norms and standards addresses these vulnerable groups, and we appreciate that we have taken this initiative. My last point, Chair, probably is that as provinces implement, there's this thing at the mechanization packages that members are talking to. Chair, I think as the community, we must also take it upon ourselves as and when we'll be interacting with communities to instill in our farmers that agriculture is a business. Now, even if we want to assist, it should not always be spoon-feeding. They should be able to meet us halfway as a department. Honorable Maswa says the budget is limited. So it is something that as a department, as a committee, we must work together and say to our farmers, agriculture is business. If you have been assisted, when you get something out of your produce, invest back into your business. But in the main, Chair, the last point, that was supposed to be the last, the contingency for drought. Members are talking about the hectares, the declination on hectareage that is planned for. What is it that we're doing? Are we ready as a department if we could have drought for this financial year? Because that is one thing that derails department mostly in achieving its targeted targets in the main. Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members. To add on to the questions, honorable minister, honorable deputy ministers, on the presentation made by the DG on the annual performance plan, if I can try and just align this to the new growth path, which has alluded there to key job drivers with the potential in the agricultural sector to create 145,000 jobs in agro-processing and place 300,000 households in agricultural smallholder schemes by 2020. Honorable Minister, we are on 2019. How far are we in terms of realizing those 145,000 jobs on agro-processing, and how far are we in terms of placing 300,000 households in the agricultural industrial products and in agricultural smallholder schemes by 2020. But also if you look at in terms of outcome four in the decent employment through inclusive economic growth, the NDP, which was initiated in 2012, speaks to a target of 1 million new jobs by 2030. In addition, it speaks to 643,000 direct jobs and 326,000 indirect jobs to be created in the agricultural, in agriculture and agro-processing. So in aligning to that 2030 vision, how far are we in terms of realizing what the NDP has envisioned? There's also been talks, Honorable Minister, on the Umzimvubu River Basin in the Eastern Cape, as well as Makatini Flats in KwaZulu-Natal. What has been the realization of these? I know at some point your former minister was speaking in terms of forestry to unlock about 100,000 hectares of forestry in the Eastern Cape and an estimate of about 40,000 hectares of forestry in KwaZulu-Natal. How far have we gone in realizing that? But I also have maybe a challenge in terms of oversight, Honorable Minister, as to looking into the issue of oversight and how to ensure when we're engaging with the department, we are actually are able to exercise as a committee the right of accountability over the executive. But here it says that in 2015, the coordination of food security was placed under the leadership of the Office of the Deputy President, which subsequently established an intergovernmental technical working group to develop food, to develop the National Food and Nutrition Security Plan for South Africa. So in terms of engagement with the department on these issues and when some of the matters are residing with the Office of the Deputy President, how we to ensure that some of these issues that we want to deal with are actually achieved. But in terms of Fetsa-Tlala Food Production Initiative, which was launched in October 2013, in terms of job creation, how much have we actually realized? You're talking 2013, it will give you 6 years later into 2019, where we are today when we speak in terms of those job statistics. What has really been the impact of Fetsa-Tlala onto our communities? You will also look at MAFISA, which is Micro Agricultural Financial Institutions of South Africa, which was established in 2004 and earmarked 1 billion for this purpose in order to improve access to financial services by the rural poor. How much of this has reached the people in the rural communities? And in terms of the provincial spread, how much has gone to each province, and what are the kinds of programs that have been supported through this particular initiative? There's also within the department an extension recovery plan or program, ERP, which was realized in 2008. With 500 million, which was allocated to the former Department of Agriculture by the National Treasury. I would also want to understand in terms of CASP, what has that those funds been utilized for? In Fetsa-Tlala, we have also put a target of 1 million hectares of land that is lying fallow in former homelands or bantustans, which is to ensure that it's under production by 2019. This is 2019. How much have we realized in terms of that 1 million hectares that we set as a target to be realized? But I think one of the things that we would want to ascertain from the department when it comes to smallholder farmers, we came across some figures here which indicate that there's been a minimal progress that has been achieved in terms of the support of smallholder farmers, with a figure that is 1,021 smallholder farmers had actually gained access to markets by the end of 2018 to the estimated 250,000 smallholder farmers. That will put us, Honorable Minister, at a 0.4% achievement rate. Are those figures correct? Because we need to also dispel the things that may be incorrect in the public domain. So it would assist us to understand as to what the figures are out there. But I've also seen in terms of these outbreaks, anthrax broke out in May in Lesotho, and the department imposed a ban on the livestock and livestock products, including wool, that was coming from Lesotho. So the surrounding provinces, particularly the Eastern Cape and the Free State, may be at a risk in this regard, because anthrax is a deadly and untreatable disease that is only prevented through vaccine, and it can as well affect human lives as well. So I would like to understand how is the department ensuring that anthrax will not get into the South African space, particularly with the looming challenges of stock theft in that territory between the border of the Eastern Cape and Lesotho and the border of the Free State and Lesotho. And are all farmers or livestock owners aware of the ban and its impact on the disease? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The department and the officials will deal with some of the detail. Maybe just to start on the issue that we have raised on anthrax. The outbreak indeed occurred in May in Lesotho, and in terms of the reporting mechanisms to the International Standard Board on Animal Health, which is OIE, Lesotho did indeed inform OIE about the presence of anthrax in their country, which then was circulated to all countries to know, not just ourselves, but globally. And immediately we imposed a ban on all animal products, even animals themselves. We put control measures on the borders between Lesotho and ourselves. But we also had communication with the two provinces to ensure that the farmers are aware, particularly in the Free State, those that are bordering Lesotho, as well as in the Eastern Cape. We approached the Department of International Relations and Cooperation through the African Renaissance Fund, which assists in neighboring countries when there are disasters of sorts, because the Lesotho Department of Agriculture did inform us of the challenges that they're having in terms of the vaccines for anthrax. So in consultation with the with DECO as well as Treasury, an amount was made available for acquisition of vaccines for Lesotho as well as the bordering provinces to acquire those vaccines through on-the-support biological products, which is part of the entities of the state. We again ensured that we will assist Lesotho with four vets who will be assisting them in terms of the vaccination. So in our view, the containment measures has been put, and we're monitoring on a daily basis to ensure that indeed there is no movement. There was one incident where we actually had to stop quarantine one of the people who was bringing animals into South Africa as a result of that. So we are sure that those measures have been put in place. Just to also say that, so that I can link that with other measures that relate to biosecurity. Indeed, it's true that with regards to the veterinary services, we are not as strong as we should be in terms of the personnel. And it is for that reason that we are looking at how we could utilize animal health technicians and how we could also bring in unemployed graduates in the veterinary space so that we can build our capacity. The challenge of agriculture being a concurrent function is that even though veterinary funds are, you know, are allocated to provinces in terms of treasury programs, sometimes that's one of the weaknesses, that money gets used for other things as opposed to veterinary services. And in the MINMEC meeting that we've had early June, we have actually impressed upon provinces, but also having discussions with treasury so that those resources are earmarked for the work that they are supposed to do. And it talks to the issue of the red line on foot and mouth. Though the foot and mouth incident that we have was in Limpopo, it was on the red line that would go further down to Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal, areas that we know are prone to foot and mouth because of the buffalo in the parks, like your Kruger Park, Susuwe in KZN, and, you know, in Limpopo, part of the Kruger. We have contained, but the reality is that we need to continuously ensure that together with the provinces, we build those fences, because you can't say you've built it once. You have to maintain the fences, but also you have to educate the communities around those who have livestock to make sure that they manage, you know, your dipping services, your vaccination in time. And I think it's important for us to appreciate and did say that we do have a challenge, and that challenge we are seeking to address. And it talks also to the issue of, you know, capital investment in terms of improving our OBP factory that will assist us. So we have got the funding now to be able to do that improvement of our, you know, OBP factory so that it complies with the international standards. We've also been fortunate that Treasury has finally given resources to ARC to actually improve their facility on FMD Center. So we think with all of those combinations, there will be an improvement. I may not be able to speak to the detail, honorable members, on the issue of the import and export, how strong our phytosanitary is to be able to respond quickly on some of the issues. I'm sure the department can deal with that. But I think overall we must accept that we do need to strengthen some of those areas if we want to talk about improving our trade capacity and so on. I actually said when I was speaking to the members of the Executive Council that if one were to say in three names what are the things that we'll have to do, is to fix, renovate, reimagine in terms of how we do things, and then be able to leverage on the resources that are there. And the department and the entities have appreciated that indeed there's a lot of fixing that we have to do. And it also talks to the issue, Honorable Ntweti, that you have raised, that indeed we need to re-envision how we actually support farmers instead of creating new. Let's also look at how, what is the model of actually supporting existing farmers, taking into consideration the knowledge that the farmers have, and where do we intervene where we can actually assist in their capacity. And I fully appreciate what you say, that at times our interventions go above what the farmers did, so they are not actually relevant to what they need. It also therefore talks to how do we work closely with our provinces, who are the implementing agents, on how best we can support the farmers. In my introduction, I did indicate also the need for alignment between two departments, because what you will find is that land reform and rural development have more resources on land development and rural enterprises, which are basically farmer support. But you look at the departments of agricultural budget, as very little budget on that. So our hope is that with these realignments of the department, it will assist us to also maximize those resources. As I said, that I was just dealing broadly with some of the issues. The department will just have to deal with the details on the matters that the officials have raised. But we want to appreciate also the suggestions that members have made on how we could improve. Thank you. DG, and your team.
Thank you, Minister. I think I will skip some of the questions to my colleagues. I'll just quickly just go start perhaps with the question that Honorable Steen raised on, I'll just go to blended finance. You know, this program has received quite a lot of attention. The end result is that when we started assessing it, we wanted to pilot it, and we realized as we started that people who were inside of government were the ones who applied for this. And as we move forward, we then said, no, we cannot have a program that is designed for the poor of the poor in far remote areas where poverty is, now is actually wants to benefit the people internal in the land bank and in rural development. We therefore took it away from the forum that was doing the assessment, and we got involved ourselves. And therefore, we had, unfortunately, Madam Steen, we had to temporarily suspend it and come up with a criteria. And that criteria we've come up with, one of the criteria is that that program, you cannot get it if you don't have a take-off agreement. And the quality of that take-off agreement is important. In other words, we are no longer throwing money in the dark. Once you are approved, it must be the fact that you are going to do soil tests, you are going to ensure that you understand out of the soil test the type of commodity, but that commodity cannot come out of yourself. It must be a function of the market. The customer says, I want this. Then you go back to your soil analysis to find out if you have got that. And therefore, out of that, you get a take-off agreement. And the quality of that take-off agreement, in other words, does it meet the requirements of the cultivar? Does it meet of the customer in terms of the cultivar that the customer wants? And do we therefore have, can we repay the loan? What is the loan component there? So really, we have to polish those things and polish the criteria. And we also have got to present it to the minister. Or this is the new ministry, present it to them. And also, if you look at the legacy report, you will note that there was a misunderstanding about what the criteria is. The question about, the Honorable Chair raised about the targets, how far we were, 300 jobs, for example, slide 6, Honorable Chair. We said we are going to do 300,000 jobs. We have done 1.4, and it is validated. We have done 1.4 million. And the impact in changing rural lives has been assessed by State SA, and there are changes that are occurring in our communities. People are coming up with their own, enterprises. They are developing their own businesses. And this change that is happening, but it is gradual. In terms of hectares, we have to do 1 million hectares of unutilized land. We have done, and is validated, 2.8 million. SSA and our own validation prove that this is true. We have got 880,000 smallholders had to be supported. We did about almost 250,000. And the impact in terms of the increase in percentage of those people who own productive land by disadvantaged people is visible in most of the provinces. Similarly, we have to do about 152,500 hectares of land to be rehabilitated. There has been soil erosion. Some of the forests have been burnt. We had to rehabilitate those. And we have done, we have to do about 152. We've done 179,000. And that improved our national resources, and it has therefore improved food security. For example, where there has been felt fires, where there has been overgrazing, we have done rotational grazing. So we have seen quite a number of changes against the target that, for example, 1.6 million households benefiting from food security and nutrition initiatives, we have done about 19 million of that. The point is that poverty has moved with the rural-urban migration process. And we have now noticed that it's no longer the rural village that has got poverty, as we would know normally. But we found it in the fringes of urban areas, such as Gauteng, for example. So we have to change our strategies to deal with that. We also have acknowledged the fact that there are pockets in our communities of people who live, who go to bed without food. And we're targeting those with new initiative, especially Ilimo or Feta Clan. We're targeting those, so there has been a change, Honorable Chair, as far as that is concerned. I think the issue of the cement, and I will throw it to my production guy, the health production and animal husbandry, Mr. Ramasodi. Can you respond to that?
We have 5 minutes to conclude.
Just respond to that, Mr. Ramasodi.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, thanks for the question. The question that came from Honorable Stein has been greatly answered by the Minister in terms of the capacity within vet services. And the only suffice to say, I would like to meet with Ms. Stein just to get the details, because we might differ in terms of what the content of the email shows. Thank you very much.
Chair, I think we will perhaps deal with some of the questions around the 450 farmers and how much of those have been down, and the 75-year-old who as well as given. We are going to deal with that. I don't think we have got the time right now, as noting what the chair was saying. But there has been a lot of the problem with this dealing with the provinces and the national. You put policies together and the provinces had to implement. And sometimes they implement things not according to the alignment that we require. So that could be the case, but we are trying to strengthen that. 450 farmers, indeed, we have broken them per province, and we are advancing on that. We have done a proper segmentation, and we have put money together. We have got about 800 million that is that we are working with AgriCeta to train most of these farmers. And they are all graduating to have certification in terms of the SA gap and the global gap for exports. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Minister, and your team on the presentation on the APP. We will therefore, Honorable Members, try to catch up on time. We are already one presentation behind in terms of our agenda. I will request that we take both the presentation on Agricultural Research Council, as well as the presentation by Onderstepoort Biological Products. Then we will have questions after the two presentations. Honorable Kappa?
Yes, I'm not taking it. Just to know that my questions were not referred to. Just that.
What we will then do, Honorable Members, will take note of that, and then we will request the department to respond to us in writing for the issues that haven't been attended to, because we have time to catch up, and we will suffer the challenge of staying here till late. Minister and Honorable Montwedi.
Through you, Chair, I was going to suggest that maybe instead of having written response, let's say after the budget debate, we actually have a session with the portfolio committee so that we can actually engage on these issues that we might not have an opportunity to respond to. Because, yes, we may respond in writing, but maybe members may want further clarity. So I will propose that maybe the portfolio committee look at a date after the budget debate of the portfolio committee so that we can have more time just to deliberate on some of these issues of concern that were raised. If it's
Honorable Minister, I will have to stick to what I have requested in terms of receiving this in writing, and I will substantiate what I am saying in that regard. We are still to formulate the committee's program, and therefore when we compile questions that we feel haven't been answered, it's to assist us in compiling then a program as to these are the issues we would like to put as an item in our program so we can engage the ministry on. That is the approach I was taking, Honorable Member. So I hope that we'll be able to cover and ensure that these issues are not left hanging, but we are able to address them properly by locating them on our program, as we have just made a temporary program to get us to the end of the second term. Third term and fourth term is still unto us. We still need to do a program for the rest of the year. Thank you. Are you covered, Honorable Muntweri?
I think I fully agree with what the minister is saying. Maybe as we develop our program, let us find space where we can have an interaction with the department so that we are able to clear all of these gray areas. They must be incorporated into that program and make sure that we deal with that, so that when we write at times, the honorable member is saying some of the things were there the last year. So at least when you are engaging, we are able to get new and updated information. If we can incorporate it in our program, Chair.
You would have seen from our deliberation yesterday, honorable members, we are already teasing out the date of the 24th to have a full day as a committee to engage with the legacy reports. Some of these questions will be taken during that period. So we are not dispensing of the work of honorable members in the committee, but we will try to locate a date to deal with these issues. I'm just trying to get us to move on so we then are able to cover the time that has been lost.
Chairperson, I would like to support you on having it in writing. You will also see that most of the questions is some of the things that came out of the legacy report that's almost unanswered or unresolved issues. So I think it would be good for new members to have that in writing before we have the budget debate, because out of experience, some of these things disappear in thin air. So it would be good if we get it in writing, and then when we do meet again, people will also have that background information, and it's more easier to reflect back to the questions in writing.
Thank you. Can we move on to the two presentations as per my earlier request? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Minister, Deputy Ministers, and honorable members, colleagues. Good morning. I'm Shadrach Mwepudi from the Agricultural Research Council, the Chief Executive of the Agricultural Research Council. I am accompanied by Mr. Alan Bishop, one of our board members. I think he will raise his hand. He's at the back there. I'm also accompanied by our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Maureen Manyama, and our Group Executive responsible for Human Resources and Legal Services, Ms. Mahomu Umlau. The other group executives are not here. We extend an apology on behalf of the chair of the board, who could not be available for health reasons, and other board members. I will try and be brief in terms of our presentation, Chair and honorable members. But just to suffice to say, if anything goes, I would strongly suggest that the members really appraise themselves in more detail on the content of the foreword that is contained in the APP of the Agricultural Research Council, particularly because it's not just the foreword as written by the CEO, it's a foreword that has actually been debated upon and approved by the board of the Agricultural Research Council and informs this particular annual performance plan. As an organization, our mandate is primarily to conduct research, technology development, and ensure that we disseminate that technology as well as associated information as part and parcel of providing solutions and technologies to the agricultural sector. Our vision is aimed at being an organization that strives for excellence in agricultural research and development and for the sector. In terms of our mission, we conduct our research with partners, and we also try to provide skills development in terms of development of human capital, and we try and enable innovation among those that are in the agriculture sector so that they can have sustainable enterprises. Honorable members, this particular business plan is informed or influenced by the National Development Plan and a variety of policies and strategies as they are pulled together by the various sector departments, in particular the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, the Department of Environment, as well as the Department of Science and Technologies, which then enables us to capture how we would respond to the medium-term strategic framework. So this particular slide is just a quick caption of how the work that we do is aligned to these particular national policy and policies and priorities. I just want to highlight that essentially our aim is trying to contribute towards enabling employment and job creation in the agricultural sector, food and nutrition security for all, particularly within household, improving production, productivity and competitiveness in the whole agricultural sector, and ensuring that we contribute positively towards the achievement of proper biosecurity in the country, and providing the necessary technology platforms and technologies for agricultural production, and as indicated, contributing towards the achievement of the bioeconomy as articulated by the Department of Science and Technology, and enabling the country to adapt and respond to climate change, particularly in respect of water, land, energy, drought, and sustainable use of natural resources. And of course, we don't work in isolation. We are an institution that exists in South Africa, and that is also part of the global sphere, therefore contributing to South Africa's global and regional positioning and integration. But of course, as an institution, we also need to manage our resources much more effectively and sustainably. As a science council, we are required to respond to the indicators of performance of science as articulated by the Department of Science and Technology. These are about innovation, heavy intellectual assets, applied research in terms of technologies, fundamental research, skilled scientists, the number of people that have PhDs in the organization, doctoral fellows, scientific awards, and publications and other technologies. But these have to be converted into how they impact into the agricultural sector and are actually utilized in the agricultural sector. In the context of cultivars that are used by farmers and so on, and how these contribute towards production and productivity, food security, sustainable use of our natural resources, but also how these impact upon the economy in terms of reducing our bill of imports and so on, and agricultural transformation amongst others. We have six strategic goals that we have actually crafted to guide the nature of our work. I won't go into each one of them, but it suffice to say that the presentation provides you some insight as to what kind of work actually happens within each particular strategic objective. The next slide is just a pictorial that just sort of very quickly gives you a snapshot of the organization in terms of the Agriculture Research Council. The first strategic goal is about generating knowledge and technologies that enhance the efficiencies in crop-based agriculture. I won't go into the details, but of what that means, because that's already contained in the slide. I will assume that the members would have read that. But in particular, it's about enhancing competitiveness of the agricultural value chain, improving crop production and productivity for the agricultural sector through development of a variety of products and technologies, including solutions towards disease management. Just for example, we work around the wheat industry, which is aimed at improving wheat production and wheat productivity, both for the purpose of ensuring that farming enterprises are profitable, but also for ensuring food security. Part of the debate that we've had with the wheat industry was around trying to deal with issues around quality of wheat that is actually produced, but then the yields are lower for those kinds of varieties that are used, which then creates pressures for farmers because they don't end up getting the right kinds of profits that they need to get. To the extent that we've now successfully persuaded the wheat industry to accept that the ARC shall develop a number of different types of wheat varieties, some that are low quality in terms of traits as wheat, but also very high yielding, which is an inverse relationship, which then would enable the farmers to become profitable and mix the two once they process the wheat into flour. You get good quality bread while at the same time making the farmers profitable. This slide just provides examples of some of the wheat cultivars that the ARC has developed and released in consultation with the Winter Cereal Trusts and the Wheat Forum out there, meaning that the wheat industry has found them very acceptable and are utilizing them out there in the in terms of the farming enterprises. Similarly, we've been doing some work around maize, and we continue to do this particular work on maize, particularly focused around drought tolerance. We've developed drought-tolerant cultivars of maize through an international public-private partnership that also involves a number of countries in the SADC and Southeast and East Africa. These cultivars are particularly targeted towards smallholder farmers. We've released at least 16 of these varieties, and we have effectively transferred the actual seed production as a project, which is no longer a research project. We've actually transferred it to the custody of the shareholder department to explore how they can now produce this particular seed and make it available to farmers. We also do some work on the fruit industry, particularly around tropical and subtropical fruit crops. That's just another slide that provides an example of that. In terms of strategic goal number two, which is focused primarily on livestock, we know that livestock are important. How many minutes? Okay. Okay. This is goal number two. I have already explained what each of them is about, but let me highlight that the minister has also indicated that we've working around animal diseases and providing the necessary support. The Treasury has now provided us the requested allocation towards the construction of the foot and mouth vaccine production facility. We hope that we will be able to achieve this particular initiative within the next three to four years, starting in the current financial year, as well as other vaccines that we've been developing. Chair, in terms of our human resources, we've been working also in terms of trying to ensure that we are a high-performing organization where we develop capacity amongst our both employees, but we also have students that are enrolled at the various universities that we train as the organization in the ARC to obtain their master's and PhDs. We've got somewhere in the order of about 200 students that are working in this in a number of our projects that we're training, and they graduate year on year. Just to be safe, I'd like to say perhaps I would say our experience is that about 95% of them actually have jobs once they graduate. I won't say 100%, just in case there is doubt.
In terms of our demographics, about 42% of our staff components are female, 57% are male. In terms of demographics per race, about 72% of our staff components are African, 8% are colored, 17% are white, and about 1% are foreigners. So in terms of our challenges, we've been operating in a fairly declining funding environment with sluggish growth in our external environment in income that we generate, and that has created challenges in terms of over expenditures and organizations, particularly because we've just come through budget cuts over the last 3 years, and because we have a high component of staff, it's very difficult to cut back on expenditure in this regard, and that has impacted upon us as an organization. That has created challenges in terms of liquidity and cash constraints, which then presents questions around the organization as a going concern, with high fixed costs, and that we actually need to find a way of improving in this particular space. The slide that is before you, Chair, is just a brief, quick indicator of our total income. Part of our income comes from services we provide directly to the agricultural sector, and we get paid for that, which we call external income. And effectively, I would say the parliamentary grant constitutes about 60% of our total income. Chair, let me stop there, given that the limited amount of time, and then we can discuss the presentation. I take it as read, and then we can have questions in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we have the presentation on OPB?
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair. The CEO will make a presentation. I'll make a few remarks, and then we'll make a presentation. We are accompanied by the CFO as well as the Business Development Manager. To save time, I want to make the following facts about OBP. We've made great strides in improving our infrastructure. We have reported numerous occasions the work we're doing in terms of building a GMP facility as well as an HVAC facility in order for us to do proper research and clinical trials. We have worked very hard in terms of making sure that at least the top 20 products that we have, those products are available on time. We still have issues in terms of shortages of some of the products, and I know some of the farmers, more especially sheep farmers, complain about our price. We are working very hard to try and address those issues. We have found that the work we're doing in terms of improving our infrastructure has helped us tremendously in terms of attracting talent. We have brought back a lot of people who used to work at OBP, and we have attracted local as well as international experts to come and help us with the project we've embarked on. Thirdly, we have worked very hard to ensure that the relationship we have with both OVI and UP is improved. We think that the whole concept of rebuilding the status of the veterinary campus at OPP is very important. Interestingly enough, the CEO we have recently recruited is also the member of OVI, and we believe that is something that benefits not only OBP, but also benefits the country. We have continued to leverage on the international partnerships we have in terms of access to new vaccines, access to new technology, and hence the availability of vaccines can be seen out there in the market. The CEO will make the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the invitation, and the honourable members, and Minister and Deputy Minister, and colleagues. I'll zoom directly to our strategic goals for the financial year that we're looking at. We do have four strategic goals that we're working toward. The first one is financial sustainability. The second one is ensuring global competitiveness in terms of our products.
Yourself?
Oh, sorry. My name is Baptiste Dungu. I'm the CEO of Undisturbed Biological Products. Just started in March this year, so it's my first presentation. So in case I make some.
You made a speech and you are protected by the chair.
Thank you. So I'll try to, I'm conscious of the time, so that's why I'm moving into the strategy goals. The third one is to ensure business excellence within the organization. And then the fourth one is to contribute to social economic development as government priorities. So I move straight into the details of the strategy goals. To mention the fact that they are fully aligned with the National Growth Path, the National Development Plan, and the staff strategies that was presented earlier today. And that is essentially into our strategy goal 1, 2, and 4. This first one being in terms of improving our financial performance, OBP being fully commercial, we are a 3B entity, we don't get parliamentary grant, so we have to be financially sustainable and generate our own revenue and profit. So our target for this financial year is to reach 234 million rand as sales revenue. And in terms of our operational profit, we're aiming at 37 million. And in terms of our facility, as it was explained by the minister earlier, we've benefited from funding from National Treasury to improve our facility, which was not compliant with international standards. So we're putting in place a facility that will allow us to comply to good manufacturing practice standards. And in so doing, we could hopefully achieve good market presence. And for that, despite the fact that we're doing that, we're still making sure that we have product that meets the market standard. So we're aiming at having the facility to be completed in 2-3 years. So we have also an issue of production efficiency that has resulted sometime in product not being available on the market. But we work extremely hard in that, in terms of ensuring that we meet the production efficiency standard that we've worked out as an organization. And then for the second strategic goal, which is a competitive product and service portfolio, we make sure that our product is we have good customer satisfaction. There again, we have an index with very specific targets. Taking into account that we're competing with international manufacturers of vaccines that are having their product in our market. So we make sure that we reach the standard that we set ourselves. I could explain later on, if there's time, how we work out those indexes. In terms of expanding our product portfolio, so we're making sure that we broaden our scope to maintain ourselves competitive. The third strategy goal, which is to ensure business excellence within the organization, we work toward ensuring that we continue to have a clean audit. That will be the target for this year as well. And the employee satisfaction has to be also, we're targeting at a percentage of 3% from the baseline, which was established in the past financial year. And then we also work toward ensuring effective resource management. There again, there are criteria that have been put there, which we could debate later on if there are questions. In terms of the socio-economic development as per government priorities, we have been working toward establishing, ensuring that the product is available for emerging farmers. We've been establishing a number of distribution points. Cumulatively up to last year we were at 9, and then we're intending to establish 2 new ones this financial year. And in terms of BEE also, our target is to move from the level 6 where we were last year to level 5. So in terms of financials, I won't go in details. It will be, if there are questions, our CFO is in the room. He could present. If I have a few last minutes, I'll just summarize in terms of our key strategic risks, which are production efficiency. We're working very hard to improve that so that we have products available, product of quality that comply with standards of the market. We've lost also a lot of market share, which we're trying to recover by making sure that the product is available. We compete the same way with commercial companies that are in the country. The governance, strategic and operational failures also are being addressed quite extensively. I think in terms of governance, the organization, you'll remember that for 2 years they didn't have a CEO. Now that there's a permanent CEO, that I think is addressing that aspect. In terms of R&D also, our output is being broadened by bringing in expertise from different institutions in the country, working in partnership with institutions like the ARC and universities. So lastly, I'll just jump to the conclusion, which is basically making sure that we aggressively work toward ensuring good revenue, competitiveness, and growth in the market, expanding our distribution strategy, including emerging farmers, which we're really working quite strongly to target more and more, and then improving our stakeholder satisfaction and continue to with facility upgrade and modernization of our production plant, which we hope to achieve in the next 2 or 3 years to be fully commissioned, and then to continuously improve our people performance and business excellence. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Honorable members, we would like to propose that we exhaust also the presentation from the National Agricultural Marketing Council so that we can take all the questions. So we'll invite them to present as well. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, on behalf of the Marketing Council, I'll make some introduction points and then the CEO will do the presentation. I'm currently, I'm Harry Prinsloo, I'm the acting chair of the NMC, and I'm accompanied by the CEO, Mrs. Zama, and then also Mr. Bonani, who are the manager of Industry Trust and in Transformation, and Ms. Fuseka, who are a board member who accompanied me today. Honourable Chair, thank you very much for the invitation to address the community. I've already also the Honourable Minister and Deputy Ministers, thank you for your company today. The role of the Council Chair are to have an overview function regarding the four objectives of the MAC Act. I will not go in detail, only to highlight some of the most important actions of our Council. Surely, Honourable Chairperson, agricultural have got a lot of challenges to be profitable and sustainable, and on top of that, to provide food security and food safety in South Africa. The NMC, as the name prescribed, are a very important tool to make sure that timely information is delivered to our stakeholders. I therefore want to advise you to visit our website, where you can have all of these information. Honorable Chair, on a yearly basis, we at the NMC have a strategic session with our senior managers to make sure that they deliver accordingly to as what we are required in the MAP Act. And we will have our strategic session tomorrow morning. As many institutions, we also have budget constraints, and we will also look into that issues. Chairperson, then we've got some subcommittees, and I really believe that they are functioning very well. And I'm only going to mention two of them. One is the CALC, as we know them, the Crop Estimate Liaison Committee. As you know, that they are only allowed to be in the parameters of 5 to 8% of their crop estimation yearly. And I can state here today that they are in that parameters, and that's a very important tool for our grain farmers in South Africa as well as the whole grain industry. Secondly, Chairman, we've got also the Section 7 Committee, who dealt with disasters and droughts. And with the change in administration, we've already talked to the minister that we will have a meeting with her in due course to give her the proposals of a committee that's been run by the NMC to see how we can dealt with the drought and disaster issues in future. So, Honourable Chair, I think in conclusion, I want to say that we at the NMC looking forward, working with the Portfolio Committee, but as well as our Honourable Minister and Deputy Ministers, and we will discuss our issues in the line function with her in when its time is right for that. On a lighter note, probably, Chairman, I would say that I can see there's a lot of changes from the Minister, and we're going to deal with that as we going forward, and we're looking forward to work with her as our new minister. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Council, Honorable Chairperson, and the Honorable Members of the Committee, Honorable Minister, Deputy Ministers, the Director General, and colleagues. Good morning. My name is Zama Khalisa. I'm the CEO of the NMC. Taking a tune from my colleague from OBP, I'm also here just over a year now as a CEO. So this is, I think, my second appearance before the committee. My presentation shall try to be quick, Honorable Chair, to be quick. My table of content is basically I'll look at the corporate identity of organization and talk quickly on the policy alignment, and I'll go straight to our deliverables, our program. Thereafter, I'll talk to the budget, and then I'll conclude. As you are aware, Honorable Chairperson, that the NMC was established in terms of Section 3 and 4 of the MAP Act of number 47 of 1996, as amended number 59 of 1997. And in terms of our mandate, is the NMC is strategic function is that of advisory body that advises the Honorable Minister and directly affected groups. That is our vision, our mission, and core values. That is basically the summary of overall strategy of the NMC. The MAP Act provides four objectives, which really, whatever that we do as the NMC is around those four objectives. And the first one is around increasing of market access for all market participants, the promotion of efficiency of the marketing of agricultural products, optimization of the export earnings from agricultural products, and enhancement of the viability of the agricultural sector. Those are the faces, Honorable Chairperson, of the board members of the NMC. We have five key programs. One is the business excellence, which is basically around the administration. The second one is market access services to all participants, which is aligned to our objectives of the Act. And then we have the support of more efficient marketing environment. The fourth one is the facilitation of enhancement of export earnings from agriculture. And the fifth one is support of viability of the sector. So in terms of the policy context, my presentation will talk to NDP, particularly chapter number 6, and I'll talk quickly to the 7 priorities as the previous SONA, but also the February SONA as well. That is basically the policy context. And in terms of the middle block, I will mainly be focusing on two first priorities in terms of my presentation, which is one, the economic transformation and job creation. And the second one, I will talk more on education skills development and health, which also it talks to the SONA of February 2019 priorities number 1 and number 2. So my presentation will dwell around those two priorities. That is basically the evolution of the Marketing Act. In terms of our deliverables, obviously we look in terms of overall strategic leadership, corporate governance, risk management and compliance, business continuity, legal service and project management. Again, we focus on financial management, supply chain management, audit and IT support. And on the human capital side, we focus on HR strategy, talent management, employee relations and workforce planning. In terms of our human capital, Chair, we have a very important program which is around the establishment or the upliftment of the youth skills. We call it Y Agriculture, which is basically about attracting the youth of South Africa to agriculture and address the lack of job of opportunities as well. So obviously we know that there are critical challenges that are facing the sector, which one of them is the lack of sufficient access to information, knowledge and education about agriculture at secondary level. Most learners from the non-agricultural schools do not have access to agricultural subjects as they excluded in their syllabus, and therefore the inadequate preparation of learners by tertiary institutions for work environment. So basically the NAMC is working to assist the schools on career guidance. We are visiting a number of schools, and some of them are coming to us where we provide them some career guidance. But we also issue some student bursaries, working in partnership with the AgriSeta on different universities for the undergraduate degrees. In terms of the skills development, we work with the Bushe Farmers Academy and other institutions that are providing training for the smallholder farmers and as well for the entrepreneurs as well. Now the second program is the one of the market access. And the Small Market Access Tracker, which is a track progress towards market access for smallholder farmers on a regular basis. We work with different industry commodity associations for us to be able to implement this program. And currently we are producing what we call the Agri-Entrepreneur publication, which really has very successful stories that we share with the smallholder farmers. That is part of the information dissemination. But again, in terms of our work, Honorable Chairperson, we do with the industries. In terms of the tributary levies, we are able to support the smallholder farmers who are in agriculture in terms of transformation from those funds. As you are aware that the 20% is allocated for transformation. But also in terms of the industry trust, we are able then to support, again, the smallholder farmers in terms of their enterprise development, skills training as well. And part of the market access is the development schemes, and one of the most critical one on our side is the one that we call the National Red Meat Development Program. Basically the program that is creating the market access for the smallholder farmers who are in the livestock industry. And this program is basically about creating the infrastructure and feeding facilities where we feed the livestock for rural, communities, livestock communities. And that picture there, you can see there that the animal that was fed from the picture number one, and the animal after some 2-3 months, you can see how it picked up the weight after 60 days. So that is the practical work that really we're doing, because obviously for the farmers to access the market, it's important that they must improve the quality of their products. So basically this is more of improving the quality of the livestock for them to be taken to the market. So basically that slide is showing you know, the achievements that the NMC and other partners have achieved in this kind of program. So you can see the number of livestock that has been sold and the amount of money that has been generated, and that all those amounts of money, Honorable Chairperson, are circulating within the rural environment through the livestock auctions. But part of that, obviously, there are jobs that are being created. Now that table, it shows really the number of auctions that we had in KwaZulu-Natal in particular. So you can really see the amounts of monies that were circulating in that particular community on each individual farmer and per auction as well. I won't go into details into that. The second program is the agro-food chain research. We undertake the studies on food inflation, supply and demand estimates, farm-to-retail margins, and other value chains. But part of that is the capacity building facilitation, particularly on financial management and marketing, which is really benefit the smallholder farmers. Again, we do some training in terms of empowering the emerging smallholder farmers, but also in particular the women. We have a specific training program for women, which we call AgriBiz for Women. So you can see there the number of women that we are training, basically about, you know, marketing, financial management, and all of that. And all of those beneficiaries, they are already running their own businesses in agriculture. The NMC undertakes studies to identify export market opportunities for FA products. So work in partnership with the industry organizations through the secretary levies, how they fund the export promotions. The NMC facilitates technical support and certification for smallholder farmers in order to produce exportable products. Now, the last program, Honorable Chairperson, is the viability of the sector. Obviously, they were looking in terms of the infrastructure investment, particularly the marketing infrastructure. We still feel that we need to improve in terms of the registration, records, and returns under secretary measures. Supply and demand and crop estimates, as mentioned by our Chairperson, it helps to enable decision-making by all value chains. And in terms of our directly affected groups register, it helps to enable better engagement with stakeholders. These are basically the assets that are held by the industry trust, which the NMC has an influence in terms of their disbursements to support the smallholder farmers and industry. These are the funds that were received from the former control boards. And basically that is how the funds have been grown now so far. That is the legislation policy measures. We talk of levies, records and returns, registrations, and control of exports. In terms of our budget estimates, Honorable Chairperson, you can see our baseline for the current financial year is just over 45 million, which has increased by 4.6%. That is basically the breakdown of the budget and different components. And in terms of different programs, you can see the breakdown again of the budget, which at the end comes up to 45.2 million. In conclusion, Honorable Chairperson, we're saying here policy alignment of the NMC work to the vision of 2030 and SONA as was done, evidence-based policies, funding of key government programs such as CP11, from the PICC has not been mainstreamed properly. And we are seeing again alignment of government support package to farmers such as CASP and others to be aligned particularly with the industry funds like your Signatory Levels and Trust, that is to work in collaboration. The alignment and finalization of prolonged amendments of the Act. The Act has to be aligned to the market conditions that have changed and priorities of the NDP. And finally, Honorable Chairperson, is that the NMC budget, well, is very small to the legislative task that the organization has to undertake. Market infrastructure intervention in the smallholder sector is long overdue. That is basically, Chairperson, the end of our presentation, and I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Let us appreciate the presentation that has been put to us, all three of them. We will now get into the questions of clarity that may have triggered some interest from the presentation. But I have received note that the Honourable Minister will take leave as she has been requested to go and join a meeting with the Deputy President. So, Honourable Minister, we will release you, and I think we're in capable hands in terms of the Deputy Ministers. They will be able to attend to some of the issues that may be raised by Honourable Members. And you are welcome to join us as soon as you've finished with the Deputy President. Thank you. No, Honorable Montwedi, you know, the executive is not dislodged here. You've got two deputy ministers that are also very well equipped into attending to all our questions. Honorable members, we will start this time around from Honorable Tlhape and go around into taking questions. So I'll acknowledge every one of you, and if you don't have a question, we'll move on to the next. Honorable Tlhape.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation from the entities. I think, Chair, listening to the presentations, the department will not fail, especially on issues of enhancing capacity in order to achieve the objectives of this department. What is very key, Chair, for me and the ministry is the alignment that the minister spoke about, so that we avoid duplications, we use effectively the resources at hand, because I have noted in all these presentations that there's an issue of resources. My concern, Chair, specifically is with the ARC. On the foreword that the CEO encouraged us to read on page 4, there's a paragraph that deals with the proposals of re-examining the business model for the entity. And is A up to E. I agree with B, C, D, E. My concern is only on A, a discomfort. Explores new possibly expanded revenue streams. In brackets, it has outside the agricultural sector. I just want to check, what will be the impact of this expansion outside the agricultural sector? Won't it dilute the ARC we know? Or maybe I'm jealous of the agricultural part, ARC. But what will be the impact of expanding beyond the agricultural sector? Because I would have put this as, or maybe say, propose this to be the last resort. Looking at the alignment that is here with the land reform and everybody, that we trying to work to pull in resources together so that everybody else get a fair share now. I don't think, Chair, in my take, we should be hurrying and putting this as A, just to maintain the image of ARC for now, and try to check this perceived change that Ntate Priscilla is talking about, that the minister is bringing change, or can she, amongst these changes, bring a bit of resources to ARC to salvage this matter? Thanks.
Honorable Maso.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm going to join my colleague in appreciating the work that was presented here by both entities. Also impressed, Chairperson, by the way we had the presentation, and my hope will be that the duties or resolutions that they are taking in their boardroom should be put into action in a reality, by making sure that we come up with a monitoring and evaluation policies and tools that will help them to implement the desired vision that they have presented to us as members of parliament. And I think we are not going to fail. The ANC-led government is not going to fail, because I think together we can push this motto forward and make sure that we better the lives of our people. I'm talking about the ANC-led government. I'm not talking about the ANC. I don't know if I understand myself. The ANC-led government. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. Honorable members, please be tolerating of one another and let us be able to respect each other's right to give your own opinions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I only have, in fact, I seek one clarity, Chair. I seek only one clarity, Chair, on the issue of facilitation of business linkage. The monitoring of it, are there systems in place to actually monitor the accessibility of e-market with small holders, farmers? And also, Chair, the NAMC, that it says on page is this? 27 of this document, that they facilitate the technical support and certification of small holders, farmers. So I just want to clarify there, are there any cases that they can perhaps share with us here that within this year, these are the cases that they have managed to facilitate? Thanks.
Good, Honorable Kapa.
Thank you, Chair. Also, joining my colleagues, I would have love to express this in the presence of the minister, but I'm happy that her deputies are here for them to know that I believe they have prestigious entities. In the case where I would also encourage the department to have an indicator which says the level of taking advantage of this, of the performance of these entities. Now, on the one of the ARC, while appreciating a lot of improvement, especially on the cultivars of the wheat and in other grain as well. But now in that slide 15, with that vaccine of hot water, which is 100% protection of animals in clinical trials. I'm only worried about this time, which is going to take now the 36 months. Is there no way of improving or fast-tracking this? Because to me, this is a very important achievement and giving hope for the farmers. Now, on your BP, just to clarify and make me wiser, there is where you are talking about on that production efficiency. There's that 0.78, that's not 7.8. Just to get what this means, 7.8 out of what? Just clarity on that one. I take it positively. Nama, on this marketing program, which also I believe is very, very important, I don't think there is sufficient marketing of the program itself, that it should be well known. This is great work, it should be known. If you have to find it in Farmers Weekly, let it be there, and in other, on all the publicity that would help to market it. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Montuedi.
Thank you very much, Chair. As the EFF, we will also contribute to the success in government, so that government must provide services to our people. Irrespective of whether we are not in government or what, we will contribute positively towards that. Chair, the President in his State of the Nation address, I think, allowed us to dream. Now, I want to also submit the following dreams. I've got questions for all these three entities in the ARC, OBP, and the National Agricultural Marketing Council. But when I'm happy that the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development came together, it is now operating as one. It means they'll be able to maximally use whatever resources so that our people must benefit. But in the main, you've got ARC, whom the CEO there spoke of, that they are dealing with a lower input cost, trying to reduce the input cost. What role is ARC playing to as far as providing seeds and fertilizers to farmers, so that you don't have to go and buy seeds and fertilizers? If I'm to make an example, there are different types of fertilizers. You don't get any of them less than 450 rand per bag of 50 kg. Also on the issue of seeds, the cost there, if your DG, you're going to plant 13,000 hectares, you should not go and buy seeds from these other companies. In-house, we should be able to get seeds there so that they must be distributed to cover that 13,000 hectares that you want to plant in the form of seeds, to also in the form of fertilizers. If there's no capacity to, as far as dealing with the issue of fertilizers, it must be, because it is important. You use it during planting and you use it top dressing. Therefore, you'll be able to reduce the cost of input as you are planting. So if ARC can look into that, so that the department must give it money so that we do these things in-house. We've got state-owned companies. Why are we still going to buy privately from your GWK? Why are we still buying from Hinterland, from St. Bess, if we can do our internal capacity so that we're able to deal with that? Now, the other thing is that I'm worried, CEO, you said there were budget cuts for the last 3 years. I'm not sure what informed the budget cuts. Then why should we cut the budget to an entity as important as that one? Because agriculture is one of the greatest contributors to our GDP. And if we cut costs, budget, it means we don't take that contributor seriously, so that it must contribute to our GDP. On the OBP, there are chemicals that we use when you are planting, the chemicals that and vaccines, this and that. There's also a lot of money. Government is buying all of these things from external providers. Why is OBP actually doing that? And if it's doing that, it has not been doing it at a bigger scale. Can't it do it at a bigger scale so that you get to cut the costs? If you were to buy a 5 liter of Roundup, it's nothing less than 1,200 per 5 liter. Now, if you have got internal capacity, OBP gets to do that, it is distributed to our farmers, you are going to cut a lot of money that we pay in this agri-delight. You know, this agri-delight, these other implementing agencies that we are saying they're implementing for government, and yet they're eating money from government. So if OBP can also play that role. Lastly, Chair, on the issue of the National Agricultural Marketing Council, I hear you said you identify export markets for farmers, but I can tell you, we are not identifying markets. And if you're identifying markets, you are saying you're advising the minister around the issue of the market. Where and how do you do that? Where I come from, the only market where we go to Sanvest silos. If there's grain, you go to Sanvest silo, Sanvest take it to wherever they want to take it. They do not even pay you the money that is determined, the suffix price, that you are supposed to get per ton per that particular grain that you sold to them. Now, there are no new markets. Even in SAB, they can't plant more barley because they are saying we can only take a certain number of tons per season. Now, how are you identifying markets? There are Lucerne people. Methape will know. When you go to Northwest in town, every day there are tractors next to the roads selling Lucerne, tons and tons and tons of Lucerne. There's no market for that. When you sell that Lucerne, you must go to GWK or you must go to Sanvest. The grading system of Lucerne. Why are the extension service that you provide as government, why can't it have capacity internally so that you do grading of this feed or of this grain? Though some of them are incorrectly graded, deliberately so. But if you've got internal capacity in government where when a bale of Lucerne is there, it is graded by you as a department, and you say, this is grade A, this is grade B, it would be helping farmers. Well, I can tell you, these companies, they are ripping off our farmers because they give them gradings that are wrong. Somebody comes, buy crops from you, and give you what he thinks is the best grade for that crop and goes to sell it at a better grade wherever that they're going to sell. So I said dreams, Chair, because these are very important entities that must contribute to the development of agriculture in South Africa. And there's no linkage in terms of how do they go about doing that. So if the DG and your team with entities can look beyond and making sure that you no longer have to buy seeds from outside, you buy seeds of maize for about 300 hectares. They cost you 2 million. And a seed for maize, when you go buy it, it's yourself. It's not like that. Even when you go to do quotations from these entities, from this GWK, Hinterland, they ask you, are you from government? Yeah. Okay. Are they planting for you? Yes. They give you very high price. It is a fact. But if you do them yourself, you're going to save a lot of money. Per season, you're going to plant more hectares for farmers. Now we are ready to take the land. Can we please support our farmers so that they're able to contribute positively, Deputy Minister, how President Zoom?
No, it's fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Montwedi.
Chair, I'm sorry, I forgot something. Yeah, I made a note on slide 22. On the presentation by the National Agricultural Marketing Council, where you were saying before that there's a cow before, 60 days after, that's how the cow looked like. And the reality in most of our areas is that it looks even worse than how it looks here before. The before picture that you took is a very good picture, unlike how the current picture in our cows, in our rural villages, it is. So if you can help, because our people are unable to get profits from selling some of these things. They can't even sell because of how the situation is. So please look into that. You want to impress us with this before picture. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Montoya. I'm happy, DM, to hear from Honorable Montwedi that you are president. I think he's subscribing elsewhere. So, Honorable Batan.
Thank you. Chair, my input would not necessarily be specific as per particular entity, but will be generic in approach. My view is the presentations, all of them, they seem to give us a what I call a good story. but does not necessarily speak to challenges of those particular institutions or entities. Now my question is, we are here to present APPs, which most probably have come through the MTEF period for the past 3 years, or entering into a new MTEF for the next 3 years. Given the GDP and financial capacity of institutions and government and entities, there's a clear indication that there is no new money. Now, my question is, your targets, your indicators versus your targets, are they still sustained as they were in the previous financial year? If they are, what are you saying? Is it possible that this particular institution's entities, department, to implement what is in their targets, given the financial constraints? If indeed they are able, were they able to implement in the previous quarters or in the previous financial year? And if they are unable to, what are the remedial actions? What are they going to do to ensure that everything that they are presenting to us today is possible? Chair, for instance, there would be I can't actually remember which entity spoke about issues of vacancy rate. Now, based on your financial and human capacity challenges, are we honest enough to say this is possible? We are capable as entities and as the department to implement this particular target that I was speaking to. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would maybe just like to hook onto what my colleague has said to my left. Specifically, and I would like to speak specifically to ARC, on their presentation page number 27, when they identify their challenges to date. They have point number 4, liquidity challenges, cash constraints, experience to date, inability to pay invoices. Point number 5, current liabilities exceed current assets. And what does that mean in terms of, and yesterday in all of our briefings, and I can't remember exactly in terms of which entity it was as well, and I know we have two fairly new CEOs at OBP and at NAMP, NAMC, and I know we had an acting CFO, if I understand correctly, from OBP. That position has also been filled. How is that impacting our targets, and how is our financial constraint impacting our targets and the way forward, and specifically seeing as with this APP and going into a new budget then at the 1920 financial year, how are we seeing our targets being achieved? How are we seeing our projects being achieved? Because we have a very good story to tell, and I would agree with that. In the Free State, we always use, we have a very good story to tell, but if you see on ground level, it's not really a good story. So how is that in terms of that? How is that setting over? Then specifically to OBP as well, on page 17 of their presentation, and maybe to their corporate plan on page 15, they made mention of their gross sales revenue, and they mentioned that they do not have state funding. And their baseline is 168 million, and what they estimated for 18-19, do they already know what the actual income was for, or their revenue was for 18-19, and is that 234 million then via SINLIC? I'm going to ask a colleague to understand Afrikaans maybe to help. Is that a reliable is that a reliable target to set for yourself to say that this is realistic? Thank you. Is that a realistic target? And then also just to add on to my colleague of the EFF, page 22 on NAMC, mention of the cows being fed, and I saw the pictures as well, and you mentioned that you have feeding schemes in that process. I would like to hear from the council exactly what are they doing in terms of training. How many of these farmers have they trained? Because it doesn't to me, and I remembered when the department was actually presenting, I think the latest statistics I had was something like 9 out of 10 of our black farmers cannot make a success of what they're doing because of insufficient funding and insufficient support. And that is worrying, as we need our black farmers to also commercialize. So if they can maybe just give a clearer description as to how many farmers are part of this National Red Meat Development Program, how are they actually training them, and the way forward to that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Masipa.
I'm fine. I have got no question.
Honorable Mbabama.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yesterday you said something quite profound, which I found quite interesting as well, that, you know, you've got to understand the past before you can actually go into the future. And I think for me that is the line that I'm going to take when looking at these three entities. The three entities have given us their presentations, and I'm very grateful for that. The ARC stands out like a sore thumb in terms of challenges. But then maybe, as some of our colleagues said, you know, it's because none of the others really put the real challenges to us. So in terms of my first statement, I feel that we all need to do a lot of reading on the entities, especially myself. I'm more of a person on the land reform side than on the agricultural side. So, you know, we really need to understand the businesses and understand specifically ARC. When was the last time that it was profitable? And what are the reasons to date? I don't know if that would be a question for the department themselves, if there is that, you know, history, or our researchers could assist us in this. But I think it's important to say when was the last time the ARC was profitable and what has happened to date, so that we can understand going forward, you know, how to actually assist. Because I don't think our role is to criticize constructively only. It's also to be part of the solution. Thank you.
Honorable Steng.
Chairperson, yes. I'm in the position that I have a background on all of these entities, fortunately or unfortunately. I would like to make a suggestion or proposal, and I think it links up to a lot of what was discussed here, and it's also a pity that the minister is not here, but I'm sure the message will get to the minister. And I was just thinking about it now, and it's something that's been coming on for the last few years.
The minister is here, Honorable Spain, in terms of the department is here, so don't worry, all these things are...
No, I know, I'm saying the message will get there. It's just a pity the minister is not here. I acknowledge that. Chairperson, I'm going to make a proposal or a suggestion that I think the portfolio also can look into. And it's coming back of this history thing. As far as I understand, a lot of the entities were split in the 80s, late 80s, 90s, somewhere, you know, during a period of restructuring of the country. This portfolio is going through a restructuring period again. So fisheries and forestries is taken away, land and agriculture, get, you know, now thrown into the same basket again. Why don't we look at the restructuring of the entities also? Because I had a bee in my bonnet for a long time about OBP and ARC has been split. They're not doing what they were supposed to do, you know, way back when they were changed. It's not working. It's not working. Having different entities doing different same things, not sure what who's doing what, it is not working. So I would like to think that maybe we sit down with the department and all the entities and look at the restructuring of all of them. Are they still doing what they were supposed to be doing? Because there's two entities that's not even here, Chair. It's the PPECB, Perishable Products Export. So they are also doing a lot of things that's supposed to be happening, and a lot of what other entities are doing is supposed to actually fit in with the PPECB. I don't even want to talk about them. I don't know where they are. Are they still functioning? Are they not functioning? Are they with the ARC? Are they not with the ARC? But they cost us money every year. They're not closed down, as far as I know. We asked that it be closed down and, you know, sent away somewhere. So I'm just thinking, Che, maybe that's something that we need to look into. While we're restructuring, let's restructure. Let's make sure that the agricultural sector and the land is one. Everyone that needs to deal with training must be somewhere. Everyone that needs to deal with exports and marketing must be somewhere. And let's just look at it, because we, unfortunately, I think it will be a personnel restructuring that's going to be needed. And I don't want to say that we must fire people, but because that's not what needs to happen. But we need to, because I was just thinking, I asked the question earlier in the presentation on agriculture, on exports and what was that word, on when, you know, struggling to export and import things into the country. But we sit with the marketing council, so are they even involved in that or not? Are they not talking to the department or not? So that's my proposal, Chair, that we look at that.
Thank you, honorable members. Let's take note that NWEHA itself has been deregistered. Secondly, as far as we concerned in terms of the pronouncements by the President, His Excellency, President Ramaphosa, the merging of departments has been said to make sure that there's no retrenchments and losses of jobs. So we are trying to ensure that we save jobs and people are where they are meant to be and doing the work they ought to be doing. But let me sponsor some questions, honorable members, in terms of the presentations that have been put to us by the entities, and maybe I will start on the ARC presentation that was put to us and try to ascertain in terms of the funding they receive as predominantly relied on the parliamentary grants that they have been receiving. But we all know that they are operating in declining funding environment. And I'd like to know as to what is ARC doing to find extra funding to ensure that this work of theirs is sustainable. But there's also been audit findings and regressing internal audit outcomes. There's been a qualified audit opinion in the 2017-2018 financial year, and it specifically focused particularly on governance and the mismanagement of finance. Like to understand what are the issues embedded in that. But if you look at the issues centered around PFMA, there's been some contraventions in terms of the annual financial statements which were submitted for auditing were not prepared according to the PFMA standards. And we'd like to understand as to how was that managed. The expenditure was incurred in the excess of the approved budget, and the effective and appropriate steps were not taken to collect all monies due to the entity. You also have an issue centered around the expenditure management, and this relates to what effective steps were taken and or were not taken to prevent the irregular expenditure, which amounted to an amount of about 106.2 million. And it is alluded that there were no investigations that were reported by the entity on irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. There's also been issues put to us on asset management, which seems to not have proper control systems to safeguard and maintain assets which were adequate as required by PFMA standards. This also issues are centered around procurement and contract management. It says that there hasn't been any sufficient audit evidence that could be obtained. So there's no evidence that could be obtained that all contracts were awarded and quotations were accepted in accordance with the legislative requirements. I'd like ARC to speak to that. And its leadership, in terms of the leadership of ARC, it has been put to us that management has not provided adequate direction and oversight of control environment, financial management, and compliance with laws and regulations. The key controls were not adequately resulting in accurate and incomplete financial statements being submitted for audit and non-compliance with applicable legislation. The issues that are centered due to vacancies in key positions, particularly the CFO, audit action plans were not effectively implemented to adequately address root causes of previously raised audit findings. So we would like to understand some of these issues that have been put to the committee, and if ARC can assist us in understanding some of those issues. Last but not least, in terms of the presentation of ARC, is that there has been challenges in inability to source more external income to offset the declining parliamentary grants. This is something I alluded to earlier, and I'd like to understand how is the ARC addressing this challenge, and how does it source external funding. When it comes to the presentation put to us on the step board biological products, you are producing vaccines which then are utilized to generate revenue through sales of such vaccines. Is that sustainable? Are you able to survive on the sales of vaccines? And how independent can OBP be able to be if it were to be left to attend to its vaccine sales? What are the shortcomings of that? But also, the OBP has been struggling with increasing overall batch failure rate of vaccines produced, which was mainly attributed to the aging infrastructure and equipment. The OBP has also been undergoing modernization and upgrading of its vaccine manufacturing facilities, which is expected to address the problem, including its vaccine producing capacity. And in this regard, how far is the modernization and upgrading project? Is the OBP able to produce all required vaccines on time? For example, and I go back to the earlier issue we alluded to of anthrax outbreak in Lesotho, can we be taken into confidence and assured that there's actually enough anthrax vaccines that have been produced? Last but not least, honorable members, would be the presentation that has been put to us on the National Agricultural Marketing Council. In this regard, we would like to also ascertain in terms of the parliamentary grant funding that the entity receives through Program 4. Is it enough in terms of ensuring that the work of the entity is realized? You have mentioned a number of training and capacity building programs
for smallholder farmers. Are these interventions aligned and linked to those of the national department, e.g. the ones specifically focusing on agro-processing? Secondly, what is the status and funding arrangements of the strategic infrastructure program in respect of the sector, as infrastructure provision is one of the major constraints for smallholder farmers? But then let me pick up where Honorable Montwedi left off, because we share a similar interest on this slide of page 22 with the before and after picture. I come from a small, tiny village known as Mvezo Komkulu, located on the banks of Mbashe River in the Eastern Cape. And such is the reality of where I'm from, the before picture, where you see a thin cow, and very often you see white farmers coming into the villages. Ah, they offer you a heifer for your small beaten down carcass of an animal, and they take your animal and leave you with a heifer, which at amounts you can rate between the amount of 2,800 to about 3,500. You are left with this heifer. Your a cow or ox is taken to a feedlot for a 60-day program or a 90-day program. And when you follow that through and you go to the next auction, you find that very own oxen that you sold sitting on the scale and fetching anything between 15,000 and 17,000. Therefore, I'd like to understand, what is the department doing in correcting that injustice? Because the reality of where I'm from is that we are people that have only had a passion for a stock because of cultural ceremonies. So I have many cattle because I'm waiting for a circumcision ceremony of my son, or I'm waiting for the day I marry my son off or my daughter off, and it's attributed to that. The economic aspect of it is not understood by our people, and I'd like to understand as to what is the entities doing in that regard, where our people simply keep stock. And in the Eastern Cape, you are sitting with about 3.2 million head of cattle, 6 million sheep, and 7 million goats. Yet we contribute only 4% to the red meat industry. So this is one of the biggest injustices that you will find, and we continue year in, year out, monies are spent, and this before and 60 day after picture is a reality. We are not preparing our people to be able to have their own auction facilities where they can be able to take that animal to the scale, have it weighed, have a market-related price that can be able to talk to their sector. So you keep an ox when it's about 10 years old, you say, ah, it's ready to go for a circumcision ceremony for my son. But in real terms, the market says the beast must be a year or a year and a half old, nice tender meat, must be gone to the abattoir, slaughtered, and put into Woolworths as A-grade meat. How are you correcting that injustice? Thank you. Honorable Stein, you should have gotten my attention. I thought we were all done on our side. Thank you, Honorable Montwedi.
I'm really sorry, Chairperson. I just want to ask a specific question on this.
In the past 2-3 years, a lot of feedlots was built, and I have them all on a list. And my information is not one of them is functioning, maybe one. I was called in the last week or two to say the one in Butterworth is standing, the one here is standing, the one is there standing, they're all standing. So maybe, well, Chair, I was just reminded about that, because something was done in the past few years to try and resolve some of that part, but now they're just standing part of the white elephants that we were talking about. So I'm just letting the department know. We know what's happening on the ground. We're coming.
And we also have all those put to the committee so that we can be able to put it, you know, third term is a term of oversight. Or maybe we may have interest of visiting these facilities and seeing for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I didn't say most of the issues that have been raised really deal with the issue of coordination and integration of efforts. And I think now that these departments are coming together, we are going to work, if we are working at district level, all our efforts will have to be there, together with the provincial departments. I mean, I come from a village in Port St. John's. Exactly what you are saying is happening, is what we are going through. There is no localization of our breeds to the point that they give local growth. Instead, they are taken away. And the department, I can assure you, Chair, is addressing those questions. But I think for now, I will let the entities bite on the questions, Chair, because most of the strategies come from them. In particular, the issue of the feedlots in villages is a very good concept. How sustainable is it? And I do know that my colleagues have got strategies that they can handle that. For now, I'll just hand over to, for example, to my colleagues here at NAMAC, and then the rest will take their questions as they take their questions, especially the issues you raised around ARC. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much, DG. I will tackle the questions with my colleague, Bonani. And I think let me just start with the one of the animal, the before and after. I will just go and start that picture. It is a sad reality, particularly during the winter time. Those of us who are coming from the rural areas, if you look and do assessment, there is no more grazing anymore now. And the animals are dying, no doubt about it. And those who are having money or resources, like the Honorable Chairperson was saying, they come and buy those animals with down to nothing. And it only takes them 3 months to recover their money back, around to say tripled, more than that. They make fortunes out of that. Now, it shows the importance of how we as a state will need to assist the rural communities in particular. This program is focusing on those rural villages, those people who have got 1, 2, 3, 4 animals that, again, they only depend on grazing for them to be able to fatten their animals. So it's part of intervention, you know, for them not to lose their animals during the winter time. But most importantly, it's about marketing. They need to know that when you have an animal, there's a value into it. In other words, there's money that you can make onto it. That is now marketing. But before you can take your animal to the market, you need to condition your animal so that the market can have an appetite to buy it. And then it will be converted to the meat and the graze that the Honorable Chairperson was talking about. That picture, they obviously, we build these facilities, Honorable Muntwedi. We don't call them feedlots. We just call them custom feeding facilities. It's not really your traditional commercial feedlots, but it's mainly your crawls that you build that can have a capacity of between 300 to 500 animals, which is quite a lot if you look in the rural areas. And that animal, yes, you're right, the before, now at the picture, it looks much better. We receive animals worse than that. Some of them, when they come to our facilities, they put them in their wheelbarrows. And within 2 to 3 weeks, the animals, they look much better. And therefore, yes, in terms of funding of that program, it is funded by the former Rural Development Department. And now with the integration, I'm hoping that the DG, I know he has got a passion in this program, he likes it, is going to be part of the new department. We are currently now active in Eastern Cape, we are in KwaZulu-Natal, we are active in Northwest, part of Northern Cape as well. But now we are targeting to get into Limpopo, Mpumalanga. And it's going to help as well when it comes to the issue of foot and mouth, this is what we're talking about. So that is really the reality of that program. In terms of the training, obviously if you bring in a facility like this to any rural community, you must train people first. We are doing that training. We have a program manager who's a veterinary qualified person, is a vet. And before we open any facility, we do a training program first, taking them through the health issues, including the reaction of the animals when you give them this commercial feed. But remember again, you know, our animals in rural areas, they've got a mixed blood. You know, some of them, they are mixed with Brahman, something like that. So they don't react the same in terms of, you know, feeding. But again, the age, it also plays the role. The old animal does not react the same with the young animal. Now, part of marketing, we're also teaching the people that if you feed the young animal, probably 24 months or 18 months animal, as compared to your 5-year-old animal, the reaction is going to be different in terms of feeding the animal. But also again, in terms of the income, the young animal normally, you know, get more money than the old animal. So part of the program is a training on its own in terms of at what age do you as a farmer do you have to feed your animal. And I must say, honorable members, that out of this program, we have a number of individuals who are now feeding their own animals without now depending to the program itself. If you talk of sustainability, well, I think to me it's one of those programs, honorable members, that as government we have to do it. It's like the social grants. You're not going to get as returns as a state, but the people themselves, they do get returns because they sell their animals and they're able to diversify in terms of production in agriculture. So that is the reality. So there are quite a number of farmers in terms of how many are they, Honorable Brad. If you look in terms of the table that we put on slide 24, that is the auction in KwaZulu-Natal. So you can see a number of female farmers who are selling and the male farmers that are going probably to 1,700. I'm talking only by one province. So if you can go to other provinces, you can probably double or triple that number. So there's quite a number of them. I'm talking here about the villagers, the village people. So yes, we do the training. Yes, in terms of the budget, we have been getting a cut, I think, probably for the last 3 years. There's no doubt about that. But then what are we doing about it? Like I'm saying that even this program that I'm talking about, that we made an effort to be funded by somebody else, like rural development. So it's part of our strategy to go out there and get other partners who can partner with us to support our programs. The training program I spoke about, we are doing in partnership with AgriCeta. So AgriCeta is the main fund of that program. So yes, we're not folding our hands. We go and get other partners that we can work with. We have got a common interest that can come with the financial muscle to support our program, including the industry that I spoke about that are collecting levies and the trust. That is the industry money, but they are doing a lot to support our programs. The CP11, the NAMC was appointed by the two former departments to be the coordinator of that CIP. Probably 4 or 5 years ago. Until this stage, we were able to produce the business plan, which we submitted to the PICC, and obviously the issue of funding has been a challenge to be able to execute those projects. But obviously that upon the department, you know, to look. But we're in discussion and engaged with the department in terms of how do we then go forward with that. We are marketing our program, the Red Meat program. We, on annual basis, or not quarterly basis, produce a magazine that we put all our stories, your feed loss and your auctions, and we take out there, you know, we give to our farmers and to everybody else who have got an interest in the program. So we do a lot of marketing. That's why if you look at a number of, you know, provinces, there's a lot of appetite for this program. But of course, the limiting factor is the financial resources. I will hand over to Bonani to tackle some of the remaining questions. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings. I'm going to attempt to address the question of Honorable Mundweti on Lucerne. The way we are working on these products is that because there are industry trusts and there are statutory levies that are collected by industries, and part of the commitment is that 20% of the levies income be spent on transformation. So the issue of Lucerne, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, when it completed the protocol with the Chinese and started the engagements, because after the protocol was completed, there were stakeholder engagements. What we had picked up is that the commitment, the 20% commitment on the levy side of the trust and the 20 on from levies and the trust, we had said to the industry, we should be aligning these farmers to be compliant with the stipulations of the protocol. What has happened is that in terms of grading, and you are quite correct, there is a small little machine that is used in the Lucerne industry for grading. That machine is imported from somewhere in Europe, I think is Italy. Then when it gets here, it gets calibrated in terms of the grading characteristics of the Lucerne hay. And the IP of that grading is a property of the National Lucerne Trust. So what has happened over time, we have always had very few of those grading machines. As a result, the Lucerne that got graded was not the total Lucerne hay that is produced. So the engagements with the trust and the number of provincial departments, especially the province of Northwest for the farmers in Taung, and the province of the Eastern Cape, was that they, on their side, they are committing in assisting these farmers. The assistance package in terms of complying with the protocol has been that the provinces will, in collaboration with the trust, collate all this list of farmers, provide the list to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and there will be inspections that will be done. Then the interventions that will follow will be on the basis of the inspections. So it is very true that a reasonable amount of what is produced is not accounted for. The second issue is the issue of the economics of the livestock value chain. It's a sad reality. The areas that have the highest numbers of animals unfortunately do not have the facilities or the infrastructure to process these animals. With all likelihood, the animals that are slaughtered in Heidelberg, more than 50% of the animals that are slaughtered in Heidelberg, to a larger degree, have their origins in either Eastern Cape or KwaZulu-Natal. Why? The slaughter facilities are not in these provinces. So the economics is that it's cheaper to move live animals than take grains to the animals. So the grain production in the triangle has led to a situation where the investments lead to the movement of live animals to be slaughtered somewhere in Gauteng and move back. The transport costs of moving it back are borne by the consumers. The issue Honorable Chwete asked on the business linkages. One of the programs that the NAMC does, it does with the province of the Western Cape and is co-funded by government and a fund, I think it's a European-based. What has happened is that a number of farmers were identified within the deciduous fruit industry. I think there were about 28 originally. And what was done is that a pre-audit of what was happening on farms was done. What came out was that a number of fruit varieties that some of these farmers had were not the fruit varieties that are on demand. So a program to do the replanting and a program to ensure that issues of certification, they get assisted in that. What we are left with, I think now, is about 8. Most of those farmers have qualified and are funded now under the jobs funding, which is a blended finance. So the horticulture industry is one of the industries that moved fast on issues of the blended finance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I will try and answer as many questions as possible, but where possible, I will request my colleagues. I do have the CFO of the ARC here and the executive responsible for HR and legal services. Let me start with the very first question that was asking whether the proposals around getting the ARC to succeed in what it needs to be able to do, particularly in terms of generating income as a financially sustainable business. When we say exploring new and possibly expanded revenue streams, let me give you a very simple example. We generate a lot of weather data that is used in the agriculture industry for production purposes. The same weather data is used by the insurance companies to provide risk insurance to anybody, including those that are not in the in the agriculture sector. We believe that this, for example, provides an opportunity if we were to sell it to the insurance companies because they're using the data that we actually have collected and actually shaped in terms of processing it into information for it to be, and then they're generating income. So it really is a point that says looking at the whole range of other revenue streams for which the work that we currently do is not shifting away from our mandate, for which we can actually make sure we maximize the income generating opportunities of the ARC. We recognize very well as the ARC that the current spread of clients in the agricultural sector is not growing as much as it should in order for it to be able to provide or pay for the services. The majority of the land reform beneficiaries and black farmers in the communal areas don't pay for services in the ARC. Those are paid for by government. So government gives us a parliamentary grant, for example, to run the Kana Fatiaju Homu scheme, which essentially is around integrating science and record keeping and showing them how to breed these animals and also how to deal with issues of animal health so that they can have good quality animals. All of that is paid for through the parliamentary grant allocations under Kana Fatiaju Homu, the KYD, the Animal Improvement Scheme. But the reality is that the farmer then sells the animal at a very good profit, having received the service for free. So if you're cutting back on the parliamentary grants, you're actually creating a much bigger challenge for the ARC to explore other ways in which it can generate revenue. Other challenges are that a lot of the projects that are funded, even the ones that are coming through the commodity trust, are actually on a co-funding arrangement, which means for the wheat breeding program, The wheat, wheat cereal trust in terms of wheat will give us R1 for every R1 that we spend of the parliamentary grant on the breeding program. So if you cut the budget of the ARC by, say, R1, it means we've actually lost two rand because we can't get the matching funding from the commodity trust. And that's where the challenge has been in terms of the ARC. The other one in terms of the question that arose, yes, we do have M&E tools in terms of our reporting. All our quarterly reports or performance reports goes through validation and verification through our internal audit function, and on that basis we then release those particular reports. The request as to whether can we speed up the release or availability of the hard water vaccine to the producers out there, we would like to do so, but remember, first of all, we have to make sure that we comply with the regulatory requirements to make sure that the vaccine data that we have to submit to the regulators, both in the Department of Agriculture as well as in the Department of Health, that the vaccine is safe for use, and that all of that data is accurate. It takes time for us to collect that clinical data. We are actually in the process now of working with OBP to transfer the vaccine directly to OBP so that they can now collect the data for them to register it as a commercial product. Unfortunately, we are required to collect a certain amount of data that will not come out in 6 months. We have to comply with the law. We will try our best in the meantime so that we actually collect that data as soon as possible and try to make sure the vaccine is available out there as soon as possible. In terms of the questions that are around the role of the ARC as to whether we provide seeds and fertilizers and so on, this is coincidental to the nature of the work that we do. We are predominantly a research and development institution. Once we've done with the research and validating that we actually have the right product, what we actually should be doing is handing over the product to whoever could be the producer, and that could be driven by the department. We actually had a formal session where we handed over the drought-tolerant seed varieties to the Department of Agriculture for them to produce and make available to farmers. So we are not in the business of conducting research for the development of fertilizers, predominantly because of expertise and capacity in that particular space ourselves as the ARC. And also because in many instances this is an area that is dealt with by the chemical companies and not by the ARC. However, we do conduct some tests for whoever is producing or plans to produce a new fertilizer to determine whether it works according to what their claims are making. And we provide those particular results both to the department as regulators, but also to that whoever might be selling the products out there. I think the question around why the budget cuts onto the ARC, I will leave it to the department to answer that. The point that's been made around because I can't answer why the ARC was subjected to budget cuts. It was not the decision of the ARC. And then on the question of
answer the issue of the impact those budget cuts have.
I'm coming to that. I think, Shay, I've already indicated some of that around the fact that it also impacts on our inability to generate the external income because of co-funding arrangements. I think the point around challenges on the slide around no new money, what possible actions in terms of remedial actions to implement and so on. yes, it does affect our capabilities in terms of conducting certain kinds of research. It does affect our capabilities in terms of retaining skills in the organization. It does affect the performance of the organization when you do budget cuts. But the current business plan that is contained in here is contained within the constraints of the allocated budget. The external income that is contained in the business plan is based on the contracts that we've signed with a range of funders that are outside of the ARC and also outside of government. So therefore, the targets are already aligned to that. Effectively, that also deals with the next question in terms of what does that slide on the challenges mean. I think that particular slide 27. What we are trying to illustrate is that the organization came from a period in the last MTEF. This is the first year since the last MTEF in which the AFC did not have a budget cut, the year that we just started. In the last 3 years, we had budget cuts totaling in excess of 250 million. And then when you add the DST budget cuts, you add another 40 million. That's essentially almost 300 million budget cuts that the AFC was subjected to over a period of 3 years. So what we then mean is that at the same time, the sector as an agriculture sector has not actually been expanding itself to the extent that they could also take over some of the funding that has actually gone away from the parliamentary grant. Remember, I indicated I talked about the co-funding arrangements. You take away one rand, that you use for breeding in terms of the maize or research in the maize industry, maize trust cuts back the one rand. So it's on a 50-50. So it's quite a number of these various commodities. So effectively, you're losing more. We've lost more than just the 250 million rand. We need to look at when was the last ARC profitable. We can give you a slide to that. This has been a challenge that's been ongoing in the organization for many years, and we actually have been trying to address it, particularly within the context of cost containment. But you can cut costs and cut costs until the organization becomes dysfunctional or unable to do certain things. So we therefore, if I were to give you a specific answer to that, financial year 2015 is the last time we actually ended up with a profit as an organization. The ARC, even when it has all of these budget deficits, has never had a cash injection like you had with Eskom or SAA just to address its problems. We've never had that. We've actually addressed our problems internally within allocated budgets through cost containment, but also through seeking additional income from other sources. That's effectively how we've addressed this particular problem over many years. What we are saying also in the business plan is that we perhaps need to relook the business model of the ARC. And that may actually force us to also look at reducing the cost of employees in order to make sure the ARC's work is affordable and that it actually meets its balance, its budgets accordingly. The other point was about the restructuring of the SOEs. I shall leave it there. The issues that you raised arose mainly from the audit report of the Auditor General in the prior year, and we did present to the Portfolio Committee the Audit Improvement Plan to respond to all of these particular issues. But perhaps let me request the CFO to make a few comments in that regard.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the challenges for the ARC, obviously it's the liquidity challenges, wherein the current assets are currently less than the current liabilities. What the ARC owes vis-a-vis the total mining or resources that it has, there's actually a gap. But included in the current assets, there are long outstanding debtors, which are legacy issues. Those are the majority of them are coming from government. We are actively pursuing the collection thereof. But the other thing that the CEO has also mentioned is that if you look at the cost structure of the ARC, more than 90% of the parliamentary grant goes to personal costs, meaning that you are not left with enough money to pursue the OPEX, which is necessary, like your research consumables, the security, the maintenance, things that are critical in delivering the mandate of the ARC. But also the OPEX, operating expenditure, is also linked to the ability of the ARC to deliver on external income, because you need to spend money to be able to make money. So we are currently having that challenge, and hence the CEO is indicating that we need to revisit the operating model of the ARC. And as the organization, we have set ourselves to say, ideally, we need to have a target of 60% of the parliamentary grant covering the personnel cost, meaning that we need to cut the base by around 325 million in the medium term. So the ARC has prepared the financial and sustainability turnaround plan, which has been presented to the DG at DAF. I think also the chairperson of council has also engaged national treasurer at the ministry level. So what we have done to date, because based on the audit outcome, it was negative for two financial years. There are a lot of financial policies and procedures that have been developed and approved by council. We have been actively trying to recover the money, both from the staff debtors and also from the normal debtors. But another thing that we have done internally is to come up with the framework for the pricing and costing of our projects, because there were a lot of projects that the ARC took that some of them are not financially viable, meaning that it contributes negatively to the bottom line. So we are currently dealing with that. The culture of financial management has been instilled within the organization, be it through, let's say, suspending or revoking the delegation levels of authority, because we did not have the visibility in terms of the spend. So there are a lot of things that we have done within the organization. We have addressed the issue of the system, of the ERP system. And in terms of the issues relating to procurement and SEM, we currently have got a decentralized operating model, so which means that our institute have got delegations to spend up to 500,000. In the past, we did not have a plan in terms of tracking as to whether the things that they're procuring are they in line with the initial plan, procurement plan, and also aligned to the budget and all that. So currently, as the ARC, the financial plan that has been submitted for the next 3 years is currently showing a deficit, and we are aware that the PFMA is not allowing that, and hence we have came up with a plan. So we are currently busy with the 2019 audit. We are hoping that it will be a better outcome as compared to the past two financial years.
To start, sir, before we just go to OPP quickly, three challenges of the ARC.
She still has to deal with it.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks very much, Chair. In dealing with the issue around the vacancy rate, the impact of the budget cuts is reflecting on that one, in that we are unable to fill core vacancies within the organization. And also in terms of the budget cuts and the current financial situation, which is the declining PG that we've had, it has led to numerous labor relations issues. We had the first strike at the ARC, I think, in the last 13 years. This year was the first time we had a strike, and that was due to salary increases. And since that, we haven't even given salary increases to all management, from middle management upwards. And that has led to a very high staff loss, because we are, in fact, losing key personnel due to the lack of funding within the ARC. And that is going to have a huge impact in terms of delivering of the scientific outputs that the ARC has to deliver going forward.
Through you, Chair. I think we are going to work with the ARC, Chair. I think the issues that you have raised around governance and AG findings are critical in terms of their impact on the performance of the organization. And secondly, the decrease in their revenue has also really impacted them. I think the issues that were raised by the honorable member that we have to purchase from the ARC, we've begun to inform all the provinces that the ARC's products and capacity must be used. We need to leverage that instead of buying outside. But the ARC, we have argued that it needs to be competitive in its pricing also. And I think the debt also was due to the department. Department has not purchased, has not been paying the ARC for the, its services. And I've put attention to that. And lastly, Chair, I think the ARC has got a big challenge when it comes to its operation cost. Most of its money goes to pay for personal support. And they've got a plan to reduce that. And I think they need to put a lot of attention in deriving its revenue from being competitive. And the fact that the CEO is saying they have had budget cuts and we must answer his department, I think he is a little bit wrong there. The cuts are coming just from National Treasury. And we have been trying to work with the ARC and National Treasury to ensure that those cuts must stop. We have done a cost-benefit analysis and to show to them that the value of the ARC in this country cannot be overestimated. And if therefore the ARC is not receiving funding and the ARC is not competitive in its research in terms of increasing its own revenue, we are still going to have problems. So we are working with each other. I don't want to take more of your time there, but I want to assure you that the department is cognizant of what's going on with the ARC and is going to ensure that we work with the CEO to improve its capacity to generate its own revenue in particular. Maybe now, Chair, we can just, without wasting your time, go to OPP.
We'll appreciate that we deal with the other two presentations. We're already eating away on the lunch break of all the honorable members with the department and the officials that are here. So let us try and wrap up as quick as we can. So hand over to OPP.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be as quick as possible. I will respond to three questions and the CEO will do the rest. On the anthrax, I can confirm that we received an order from DAF. They haven't paid us as yet. We have dispatched the vaccine, and we have dispatched enough doses that DAF has requested. We are also making available staff to assist in the vaccination in Lesotho. So that the request that DAF has made has been adhered to. Secondly, in terms of tenders from provinces, so OBP produced about 100 vaccines. About 20 of them we make money out of. 80 vaccines that we produce just in case the country experiences an outbreak of a certain product. Some of those vaccines we produce and don't sell in 5, 6, 10 years, but we have to keep them. And we do that because we're a public entity. However, and we're the only ones who produce some of those vaccines in the country and sometimes in the world. However, when provinces buy some of the vaccines that are in the top 20% of the products that we produce, you find some of the tenders that will reflect a name of a vaccine that is produced by a multinational, which therefore means that we can't tender. I personally don't have a problem with OBP competing on price and quality because we think that we can compete with any multinational. But if we're precluded from tendering because the name of a vaccine that is there is a product that we don't produce, then we can't tender. And we think it's unfair, and we have engaged with DAF, and we've asked DAF to engage with the Treasury to say that some of these RT tenders, the way they're designed, make it impossible for someone like an OBP to compete. And I think for an entity that doesn't ask for a parliamentary grant and that responds to challenges the country faces, should sometimes get just a little bit of preference when government makes procure vaccines. Thirdly, if you go to slide number 28, we've highlighted some of the key challenges that we face. And those key challenges were based on a deep and long-term review of OBP's problems. You will see that it starts with product availability, goes down to how that has an impact on our financial performance. I would love to get an opportunity later to unpack that in detail, because each and every one of those risks that we've highlighted are risks that essentially are challenges that we're trying to address. The CEO will deal with the rest of the questions.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to be fast handling some of the questions together. The first question on production efficiency, just to comment that OBP is a we operate as a commercial entity. Like in any other commercial entity, there are certain information that you don't put necessarily in the public domain. Production efficiency index is one of those where you, if you give all information, it may end up in the end of your competitor. But basically, it's made of a number of variables, such as the stock availability versus forecast, sales as percentage of forecast. So you bring all those different index together. It gives you an indication of where you're sitting or where you should be and so on. So those details, we have them, but in this presentation, we don't necessarily put them as a public document. I hope that clarifies. On the question on Honorable Montredi, I think part of it has been answered, but I can also add the fact that I think Undersupport is called Undersupport Biological Products. We mainly focus on vaccines now, but we have also dreams that we can broaden our scope. But for that, we need first to produce our vaccine correctly and enough, and so that we can start looking into broadening our scope. Definitely, we have to go that route. Vaccines are more and more considered as a solution to, for example, the issue of antimicrobial resistance. We can address those problems through vaccination. So it's definitely something that we're aiming at, but we need first to have the right facility and the right range of product enough to satisfy the needs. In terms of the financial, the challenges, I mean, the financial situation of OBP, my personal opinion has always been that OBP is sustainable. Is a business model that can sustain on its own. It doesn't have to be considered, change as a model. We just have to be more efficient. I've passed the last 10 years internationally in the vaccine manufacturing industry globally. I know the industry extremely well. And the OBP model, I believe in it. I think it's something that once we address the current challenge, we will be able to continue to be a profitable organization. The CFO is here, and I think he can confirm. I think the 20 years that OBP has been corporatized, I don't think that it has been not profitable. It has been, although the productivity has dropped considerably because of technical and capacity problems. OBP is still a model that is sustainable, that is profitable. And I think that also addressed the issue of thinking of merging institutions. I don't think that it's a good approach, because OBP is a 3B entity which operates as a commercial entity. We have marketing department, we have sales force, which you don't necessarily have in other type of entity that are under the department. So I think it will be a big mistake to think of trying to merge it with a structure like the ARC, I think, or any other. So I think I've covered all the points that were raised. I don't know if there's one that I've left. Yeah. Thank you.
Last thought, Emek?
Respond already. I think that was the last one. Hope it was the last one. Yes. With them finishing now, it's finished on our side.
Thank you.
Like 2 minutes.
You're delegating upwards now. Dear?
Thanks, Chair, Honorable Chair. Actually, there will be nothing much to... There will be nothing to say, save to acknowledge the enrichment of... our presentations by the comments that have come through. We're taking all quite well, and as we the what the minister said earlier still holds on what we will be doing. Fortunately, on Friday, we're going to our strategic session, because we have been going through a road shows for the past 4 weeks, listening to our entities, our various departments. Having come out here now, going forward, and I think the minister will make that comment at the end of before the chair closes, to say that we're going there, and next time we come back, most of the questions indeed are going to be self-responded to by what we present. So we really appreciate the support we're receiving as well, listening to the comments. Thanks.
Honorable DM Squatcher.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I want to echo what my colleague is saying. In fact, I am of the opinion that as we come to portfolio committees and we listen to the criticism and the oversight role, one of our responsibilities is to go back and see how we strengthen where we are found wanting, where there's a weakness. I think that we take all the comments here, as indicated by Honorable Babama, that it's not only criticism. We also want to be solution-oriented. I even think that we should not shoot down the suggestion by Honorable Steyn in relation to the whole reconfiguration. Let's examine it further and see how best to maximize our resources, you know, so that we don't, you know, respond on our feet and say it's not possible, you know, because we might be able to move on. The other, just the last thing, but also, we both of us are newcomers in agriculture. You know, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we're saying that there's so much beautiful entities that have been doing good work. And I think that's the point about Kappa is making, you know. But is it out there in the public domain, you know, the kind of work that we do? So rest assured, Chair, and the colleagues here, that we take the comments here. We're not taking them lightly. Friday we're going to a strategy session. We will be continuing with your good service in the next 5 years in seeing how best we can serve our country. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Deputy Minister, but I can assure you no one is new into agriculture, because you eat 3 times a day, and that is you processing agriculture. So let us, honorable members, yes, I did hint to her that no, she must let you bend for a moment. Honorable Minister, in welcoming you back, you are actually coming in time while we are rising for our lunch break, but actually wanted to get back to the issue that was talked to in terms of facilities that are standing and not being utilized, and that meat is being taken from Eastern Cape, KZN, to be processed in Heidelberg, and then tracked back to the provinces as red meat to be utilized. Now, there is an entity or there is an abattoir that the department built in Butterworth, which I believe the former committee visited. And this has been standing without any payments since February, Honorable Minister, and that it seems to have had huge impacts on the facilities, that there is no wages that have been paid to the staff to date, and this is one of the white elephants that are standing. We would like to gain further understanding in that regard. Maybe you may as well want to do your own findings on that, but I thought we must pick this one out specifically to speak about. Now, it's not that this meat is being trucked to Heidelberg. If you build a facility in Butterworth, there's no need for this red meat to be taken to Heidelberg when there's a facility in Butterworth. So what's that facility being utilized for? Thank you, honorable members. We have eaten 30 minutes of our time on lunch. I would ask us to be very swift and ensure that we are back here at 2 o'clock to proceed with the other affairs of the day. Thank you. Meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you so much, and now I'm bothering you the whole time, but thank you. It's a crazy day,
yeah?
When are you going to load your thing? I missed the first part when the minister was speaking.
My friend.
When are you going to load your thing?